This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, Strong Bone, New Mood, StreamTech Immune, StreamTech Sport, all of their optimization products. Use code word church to get 10% off. This show is also brought to you by NailedItLife.com. For all the oil and wax smokers out there, go to NailedItLife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And if you live in California and have your medical marijuana card, they also make Los Gumis Hermanos, great, great edibles. NailedItLife.com, also Los Gumis Hermanos. And go to HitE6.com. HitE6.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. And right now, HitE6.com is doing a 5 for $50 deal. Use code word Joey's Church to get 20 per to get 5 HitE6 for $50.
A little something from DS Dorchester. I haven't heard this in fucking. It's the church, motherfuckers. To fly my shit, set for your neck. Why never remember with my Trump victims? Fuck Austin, Nick. Burn his illusion and drive with straight Austin shit. Your arsenal strip, power info jackets and clips. It's my ability to find phenomenal. July 27th, Monday. As usual, a beautiful motherfucking day to be alive. Lee Syatt. Cocksucker, Jason Tebow. What's up, cocksucker? Always got to hit the thing when the music's bumping.
It's good for the last couple weeks.
No, something but happened, don't man. Fucking touch it. Yeah.
You were introducing people.
Don't worry about introducing nobody.
He was feeling the vibe,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, we're feeling the fucking vibe. I apologize. You fuck up the vibe, man. You got to keep it together.
I think he needs to get stoned.
This is what happens when I don't see him for a few days. On the weekends, I lose him Thursday night. And he rubs feet. And he takes orders. And he gets bit slapped. And I lose him. And then it takes a couple
someone
of days.
Someone said that to me on Twitter.
Then I got to fucking feed him all this shit to bring him back in. And then he's good till Wednesday. I get on a plane and I come back on Monday and he's fucking half a Harvey Homo again. What's going on with you? With your little purple shirt. You're looking good. That's a beautiful shirt.
Thank you. I got my first sponsor for Flying G Radio, so thank you.
Look at you with the star. Yeah, Canon, Jew fucking thing.
Canon clothing.
Look at you. And they're Australia.
Yeah, they're from Australia.
Australians are some cool fucking motherfuckers.
I never met an Australian I didn't like.
Really? Seriously.
Yep, they're serious. Really. Every
there's something about
Australian.
Those motherfuckers.
I don't know what it is. They're nice. They're just nice. And you know, when you at the Comedy Store late night, anytime after like 1 o'clock, especially like during the week, because their vacations are like 2 months long. They go on holiday and they just like travel around the world for like 2 months. If it's late night and there's 5 people left in the OR at the store.
3 of them are Australians.
All of them.
Yeah.
Because the time difference, it's like noon to them, and Australians can drink till the fucking cows come home. They're indestructible.
No, the guy was very, he just hit me up. So, I mean, it's a great company, but it's, I've never been there. I've never done that kind of flight. The longest flight I ever did was like, I think 14 hours. Have you ever been to Australia?
No, but that's a hell of a flight. That's like 18 hours or some shit.
That's crazy.
For all the people who listen to the podcast, I got to get something off my chest that I just found out this morning. I always knew I wasn't going to be eligible to get a passport. Mm-hmm. I've been lying to you guys for a long fucking time. I told my wife today, I said, listen, because we got the letter back, which I knew. The fucking names don't match up. My father's name on my birth certificate and on his Cuban birth certificate don't add up. They made a mistake in New York. They made like 6 mistakes in New York.
Right.
But the truth of the story is that I was born in Cuba, but when I got citizenship or whatever, they gave me a New York City birth certificate. And they gave me that birth certificate, and I remember having the original when my mother died. It was a black piece of paper that had been typed, and they shrunk it down in those days. And that's what you took home. It was stamped. It was... Everything was on it, and it had, like, my dad was a waiter, you know, like, shit like that on it, which was always rare. I lost that birth certificate. I applied for a new one. Then they sent me this complete different fucking sheet of paper.
Right.
Like a diploma. It looks like a high school fucking diploma.
Yeah.
And once I got that high school diploma, I looked at it, I looked at the names, and I basically folded up in my pocket and prayed for the best.
Yeah.
When I went to Jamaica, I sweated it. The first time I went to Jamaica, I sweated it. I went to Hawaii. I sweated it.
That's America, though.
I was still a little too long of a fucking
anytime
flight.
You fly over an ocean, you get dicey.
You know, I know for a fact I went to Venezuela as a kid. Either I have a passport or something happened. But I will tell you that nothing's going to add up. And like I told Terry, I have a friend that's 40, a Cuban girl in Colorado.
Yeah.
Fucking chick's been here since she was 3. Well, guess what? She got a letter about fucking 6 months ago. She's not a U.S. citizen. Something happened, the computers. This bitch got to start from scratch. And in the meantime, she can't get a job.
Ugh.
It's so that's what I fucking need. That's what I fucking need right now, to send in for this passport and for them to find some fuck up, and next thing you know, I'm getting arrested and getting deported. Because if there's anybody they're going to fucking deport, I talk about Obama's wife. I want to eat her asshole. He writes this shit down, and he's like, I'll keep that motherfucker in mind.
Jesus, that's crazy. So 40 years later, she's now finding out? That's 40 years unbelievable. Later,
you know,
so what can she do? Is she just fucked?
I talked to her when I was in Denver. She came to the shows with her son and her husband. You know, I've known him for 20 fucking years. So I never wanted to mess with it. Like, I'm very lucky.
Don't rock
I'm very fortunate. I'm one of those guys. Once I know I'm very fortunate, listen, I'm living in the best country in the world. And, yeah, I don't get to travel to other countries to do comedy, and people are like, you're losing money. Listen, I know for a fact that if I apply and push the fucking envelope, like this attorney called today. He's like, this is not what's going on. And I explained that. You know, this is New York 1966. They did everything by fucking hand.
Yeah.
You know, some of that stuff, like I went looking for records 7 years ago in Union City, and they sent me to a library to do the fucking thing where you have the sheet and you got to put it under the microscope.
Microfiche.
And they have it on computer. I didn't know what I was doing, so I just abandoned ship. I ran the fuck out of there.
You look at that news.
That shit under fucking 1985 now. Under 1979, 80, your shit's gonna, because my police record, half of it is gone. I just got my record 2 years ago when they stole my identity, and I just got my police. When me and Terry were talking, let's go see through it. And I told, I go, there's 15 arrests that are completely missing. We called the service, and no, this is what's on there. They had two false arrests that were not me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two Jose Diaz's that were not, you know, my name is Jose Diaz. What the fuck? That's John Smith in the United States.
100%.
Go to Miami and look for Jose Diaz. You're dead.
You'll be there for fucking two years.
Oh, yeah. That's why I always knew. I just go to Miami. They'll never find me.
Right.
The yellow pages, Diaz is 8, 9, 10, 15 fucking pages in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But do you, like, does it worry you? Like, are you sitting there nervous?
I was always worried. I've always been worried because my parents pulled the quick one. Pulled the quick one. My wife went on Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
Right.
My uncle's on there. My dad's on there. My mom, she ain't on there. This bitch lived on the whatever islands, the Cucuz Islands outside of Cuba. She lived in Venezuela. She lived in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
She's not on there. No Ellis Island record of Denora fucking Valdez, Tuero, Malvarez, nothing.
Yeah.
All the names she's involved with. You know, so these people pulled a quick one. It was the fucking 50s and 60s. You went to Miami the way you used to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, we went to Miami the way today you go to Las Vegas. It was easier in 1955 to go to Cuba than what it is to fly from here to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, you go through less drama in the 50s going to Cuba.
Wow. It was a 30-minute flight.
Yeah, it was me, you, we're hanging out. We're having
well, it's like 90 miles, so it has to be like a 10-minute flight.
From Miami, so you're in New York City. Listen, in the fucking 84, I left New York for different reasons, but I got to be honest, I left New York because I wouldn't have lived. In 1984, Tebow, there was an airline called People's Express.
Already sounds dangerous.
Okay, People's Express offered flights to 3 places. You ready? Newark to Miami, Newark to London, and Newark to Los Angeles. Okay. That's it. Here's the catch. You didn't call them up. You couldn't call them up and go, hi, this is Lee Syed. I want to come get on People's Express. That did not work for them. Here's how it worked. You showed up. You showed up, and if you came up and got on that plane before, so you show to the airport, and you go, how you doing? My name is Jason Tebow. I want to go to London. Mr. Tebow, I don't even think you had to have ID in those days.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. They didn't know. There was no ID. Okay. Bum, 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 bum. They give you a receipt, and you paid on the plane.
So, like a fucking, like a shuttle bus.
So
practically.
You got on the plane, and then they came up and they told you what it was. Yeah. For a blanket, it was $6.
Oh, it's like Spirit.
For a snack box, it was $6. For a pillow, it was $2. For earphones with music, it was $5. Uh-huh. So by the time you got off, you paid $80 in extras. Yeah. You know, the luggage was $15. You know, the flight was, but, you know, you're dealing with Uncle Joey.
Yeah.
I would go see Joe the Baker in the Bronx in those days and get 10 credit cards, matching IDs, an insurance card, and a MAS card for a nickel.
Right.
Do you know how much wear and tear I got out of those stolen credit cards? So you get on the plane, and I get on that plane and start buying drinks for bitches.
Yeah.
I was nuts in those days. Give that sexy motherfucker a drink. Give her a drink. Give her a drink.
And they could take credit cards on the plane.
They only took credit cards on the plane. So what they did in those days, there wasn't ding. There was ching, ching, ching. The imprint.
Paper thing.
The imprint.
You can let that slide a lot.
That's like fucking stealing, like nothing.
I know.
You don't know how many Chinese lunches, because under $25, they didn't check the book.
Okay.
What's the book?
I'm young.
I don't know what this shit is.
Let's talk about. All right. The book was that if you went, I was called an under the limit thief. The limit on credit cards in those days that they had to call it in was $50. So if you went to a store and spent $42, they just imprinted it.
So, but if you spent $50, they had to call the company
to
make sure the money?
Not call it in. They do the imprint and call it in. I have Jason Tebow, 33456, expiration 626. $64 is approved. Okay. But if you didn't spend over $50, they're busy. You go to a busy store.
They don't want to take
the
time to call.
So this is part of the whole scam. You went to a busy store. So you watch. You went to the mall. You watched the latest who was the busiest, and you brought her the thing, $42, ching ching.
Yeah,
it was like stealing. So I used to have lunch every day. In those days, we always went for lunch because we pick a Chinese lunch special, me and you. Even if it was $5.95, it's on us. We'll side order of spare ribs, a couple cokes. You know what I'm saying? So we became under the limit thieves. That's what that call. It's the scummiest people in the world, but I had a great time.
It happens to me like every like 6 months.
Yeah.
I think one of the post offices has a guy in there scanning the cards, because every card I get from Bank of America gets – I didn't even activate this one. I didn't even activate it.
And they had it. Yeah, that means they got it from the inside.
And they go to like Ross and they spend $5 and they go and try to find one big one. Once they find out that it's active, then they go to find one big one. The guy said.
Let me tell you what. How with Jason Tebow. So you meet a bitch in New York City.
Okay. All right. I already like the story.
Okay. You get out of work at 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 1 in the morning. You're walking out of your little bartending union job with your little black vest.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're there, some chick from Australia is talking to you.
Right.
I really like to go out and drink. So what are you talking about? You want to have a drink? You have 2 drinks and the chick starts telling you her life. You know, she does blow 3 times, but she really doesn't like it. Hook. You make the call right there. Hold on, baby. Listen, bring me a Jibo. I got a live one.
Yeah.
Right? You start giving this chick bumps. She's hot. She sucks your fucking dick. All right? 1 in the morning in those days, 3:30, Tebow. I swear to my fucking daughter and wife, 3 in the morning, I could look at you and go, Teebs, I got an 8-ball. I got like 600. What do you got? I got 800. Let's go to Miami.
Right.
We take a cab to Newark Airport for $20. They ran on the hour, on the top of the hour, People's Express. They knew the drug addiction. They were the drug plane.
How many hours a day?
24 hours a day.
No way.
Here's where it gets interesting. From 8 to midnight, it was $69. But from midnight to 8 in the morning, it was $39 one way.
Get out of here.
Come on, guys. I'm lying to you. In those days, $40 down. It didn't matter. We were putting it on the chink's credit card from Brooklyn. Bob the...
Under a $50, so they're not going to check it anyway.
No, they're going to go ching, ching. And then when they land, they're going to run it. It's a fake card. Done.
But you're already there.
And we're going on there drinking champagne.
That's crazy. I did that from Boston to New York.
Yeah.
$30-$40 on a bus. But you flew to Miami?
Miami in those days. And then you waited down there for 3 days till your money was spent.
Yeah.
In those days, Miami knew what you were going down there for.
Sure, especially
all those,
in the 80s.
Especially those dingy, dirtier ones, those Motel 6s, they dropped their price for $15 because all the drug deals in the world were being cut in those fucking hotel rooms.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. You get on those planes. I remember getting on a plane, and I swear to God, guys, let's say there was 90 seats. Let's pretend. 60 of those seats, 55 of those people were hammered.
Oh, yeah.
Hammered. I mean, shit dripping down their nose.
Yeah. How much was to L.A.? Do you remember?
I think it was like $99 one Jesus. Way. No, I'm lying to you guys. It was really cheap. That's what the lure was. There was, but sometimes you showed up and there was a line and you had to stay there all day because now you had to qualify for the next flight. So sometimes you get to that terminal and there'd be 4,000 people out there. Not on the midnight to Miami. Those were only coke fiends, vampires, and people with AIDS.
Yeah, zombies.
Looking for new blood AIDS. And shit. Those are the people that were chasing Mel Gibson. Those were the people that were chasing Mad Max and shit. Those pale motherfuckers with the blood tube.
Yeah.
It was, uh-huh. You should have seen this plane, Tebow. It was.
Just a flying party.
And this is what, this is why I didn't really, after I left that scene in 85, I knew I would never match that. Like, I had mingled in Colorado, and I went to Aspen, and Aspen was the cocaine capital. And, you know, the party I had lived through in New
Aspen
York.
Aspen was rich cocaine party.
Rich. When I was a kid, there was a party, a pool, a place called Patty Bugatti's. And it was a bar with a pool in the middle. So after a few drinks, you could jump in the fucking pool. This is craziness.
Yeah.
And I went there a couple times, and women would jump in the pool, and next thing you know, they'd take their bottoms off, and you'd be fucking them or fingering them in the pool. This is some great, and yeah, those were different types of things that I had seen. I don't think I fingered somebody. I just heard stories, but when I left New York, the shit I saw in those clubs, like, I was never a club guy. But
me either.
The nights I did go out, like with my friend Mike Askley's one night, we went out with like an ounce of blow one night to those boom, boom, boom clubs. And we're in women's bathrooms snorting with six people in a stall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's fun, but that's why when I left with that fucking flight, I wish I would have had a camera to show you people. Even the stewardesses were hammered.
I was going to ask what they were doing.
Even the stewardesses were hammered.
And that's, you could probably still smoke on a plane back then.
You could smoke on a plane. And I remember there was a plane that I used to take, United, from San Francisco to New York, that was a double-decker. And in those days, the bottom was regular class, and they treated you like a human being, but the top of the plane was first class. You know, there used to be double-decker planes.
Yeah.
In Midnight Express, when they're going coast to coast, that's where the planes were. Miami, New York, Miami, L.A., L.A., New York. It was double-decker planes. You go upstairs, I swear to God, there would be, I'll never forget that, there was a fucking pig one time. And people were picking off the fucking pig. Fucking with an apple in his mouth, with hors d'oeuvres around it. That's the time, Tebow, that Jesus. I went up to first class. I bought a first class ticket on United. I thought I was a gangster. I was bringing back guns. And I was...
Wait.
Taking guns from Colorado to Jersey. And 2 hours later, getting on the same flight, going back to Denver. And then I would have a connection from Denver to fucking Aspen. But I would leave that... I would take like the 6 a.m. out of Aspen, connecting in Denver, 8:05, and I'd be in LA and New Jersey at 11, and I'd be at the 2 o'clock flight from Newark right back to Denver.
And you were selling guns.
And I was taking the guns back and bringing the coke. So I was in...
Trading
guns for coke. Old school, Tebow.
Oh, Jesus.
With the Miami Vice holster.
Like they a would Scorsese make them, movie.
Listen to me. When I would put the Miami Vice... I would get there, and Danny Bianculo and like three of his... Spanish friends would be sitting on a couch, and I would be their model. And I'd put the Miami Vice holster on, the Don Johnson with the fucking gun this way,
uh-huh.
and the two clips here. And yeah. I would just sit there. I was like a walking eBay. I'd say, make an offer.
Where would you sit?
I'd stand, and they'd be like on couches. And I'd take through the whole thing, put the gun in the clip it, put it here.
But in like a house?
In his apartment.
Jesus.
In his apartment. We'll ask Danny next time he calls.
So how many guns would you have? Would you?
I'd take 8 guns.
Uh-huh.
And I'd pay. I got the guy down to 500, and he'd throw in a box of bullets and the holsters. The holsters were retail 100 and something. I think I was wholesaling 8 of them at 60 a piece or something.
Yeah.
So my whole cost, the guns was 450. I think my whole cost on everything was maybe like 6, and I would charge 11.
Okay.
And then I would take 8 guns because it would be 8,800. That's a quarter of a kilo.
Okay.
So I would pick up 11 ounces for 8,000
uh-huh.
and bring it back. That was my usual.
Wild.
Tremendous, tremendous.
That had to be like an adrenaline dump, too.
And I get on those flights fucking lit.
Of course.
This is why I should be doing 20 fucking years. And I'll never forget that one time they were playing the piano on this thing. They had the pig on the table, and I'm in first class, hammered.
Yeah.
Just hammered. It'd been 3 days, Tebow.
Sure.
You know, deep. This is when I had a cocaine endurance.
Been there.
The heart didn't even bother me. No. If it pumped, that meant I was alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I fucking went up to a thing, and it was a black, velvety thing. And I'm over there with the bartender. Give me another one. I'm fucking banging them 20s. The guy's looking at me like, oh, my God, this guy's a savage.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept going to the back and doing bumps and coming back. And one of those, it was a black tablecloth. And I'm like this. And all of a sudden, I felt it, Tebow. I felt it. It was stuck up here. And I could feel it getting loose, but I couldn't cover it. There was people at the table.
That's the worst.
And the bartender was looking at me. And all of a sudden, the Coke Rock just fell. And it hit the fucking thing. And everybody looked at it at the same time. And everybody looked at me, and I looked at them, and I looked to the top.
I looked at the roof, where did this coke fall from? It wasn't my nose.
This fucking plane, and I just left and went downstairs and never went back upstairs the rest of the flight.
So you pay for a first class flight, Coke falls out of your nose, and then you go down and sit with the common folk after that?
Because you could mingle in those days.
See, that's the worst.
In those days, you can mingle. You can walk around with a drink and go, hey, where you from?
You could smoke. It was like a giant flying seal bar.
In the back, you could smoke. Mm-hmm. In the back, you could smoke. And in first class, you could smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So you could mingle. You know, in those days, a flight was a party. It wasn't people sitting like this together. When you walk in the fucking coach, they're like this. That's what you look like.
It's a punishment to fly right now.
It's a fucking punishment to fly. So in those days, people were more loose. It was two seats. You know, they had different types of food. They had sandwiches. They used to have creams and colognes in the bathrooms. So when you go in there, you want to put cream on your hands or cologne. They had little bottles. They don't fuck around, dog. They took all that away.
Mm-hmm.
But my point to that People's Express, how crazy is that? Like that, I remember doing that like 4 weekends in a row in September of 84.
I mean, it's cheaper than...
And then I was doing it, like, I did it again. There was 2 kids from our high school that were down there selling and moving around, and I was trying to nail one of those kids, and I kept going down, and I found myself, I'm going, I can't live like this. This is $100 to get fucked up. This is $80, because it's 40 and 40.
40, yeah.
What you do now is when you go back after midnight.
Yeah.
That's it. You just sleep all day and go to the airport at 11 and pray for a 12 or 1 o'clock flight.
Do you ever rob people on the plane? Because that seems like you could go back and forth and just like rob people if it was a party. Okay.
That's interesting you said that.
Of course he did.
I got stuck one time. That was when I first met my daughter's mother. She was a criminal. Me and her were fucking criminals. I
mean, your ex-wife?
My ex-wife.
Yeah.
And we had robbed. We were setting up the building. I was robbing a bookie in this hotel. I lived at the Virginian Hotel downtown San Francisco in the Tenderloin. It's still there. It's a hostel now.
Oh, it's just up there.
It's across from the Hilton and down the corner.
There
used to be Fat Ron's coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be topless coffee waitresses. The Tenderloin was a crazy time. And I moved in there. I was on the run from Colorado for credit cards. And I lived in the Virginia. And I nailed the... I loved dressing up. And I'd go to the Hilton and all the Hotel California. All those hotels. And I'd sit in the lobby with a newspaper and I'd watch the maids. And I'd follow the maids and I'd steal their keys. Now I had 2 or 3 days. Now, I wasn't a kid with an earring or a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
I looked pretty. I was built in those days and I dressed nice. So... And I had a nice smile. And I could
unassuming.
Talk to people, unassuming. Yeah, yeah. And I was an outsider. I was from New York. So they didn't fucking know. But I was a fucking 24-hour thief. And the cops caught up with me one time. And we had to take a bus to Reno. And then we went back. We had to pawn all the jewelry we robbed. And we only had enough for one plane ticket or something. I don't know what the fuck the deal was. So I put her on the plane. And she goes, let me go to Boulder, give me a couple days, and I'll get the money. I was at a fucking airport, guys, for 3 fucking days. That was the airport where I went to piss. In those days, you go to the airport. Like, if you have nothing to do, in those days, there wasn't no buzzers. You could walk your family all the way to the plane in those days. So if you drove me to the airport, in those days, people wouldn't drop you off like an animal. They would park, have a drink with you, and walk you to the fucking gate and wave at you as your plane went away with their kids.
Absolutely.
It was a complete different fucking world. So people would walk into the airport just to grab a drink. And that was the place in 85. It was 85 where I kept going to the bathroom. And it was the same dude in there. And what he'd do, you'd piss, and he'd be in one urinal, And he'd go to the other urinal and get next to Lee and try to look at his dick. And I think he'd jerk off.
Really?
And then once Lee would leave, he'd sit there and make believe he was pissing. Then you come in, and he'd go to your urinal next to you, and he'd look at your dick. And I went in there this the first time, and I'm like, this fucking guy. But I didn't say nothing. The second time I went in, he popped right, and he was sweating and shit.
How old was he? Describe him.
I had to be maybe 22, and this guy was probably 30-something.
Uh-huh.
But you could see he was up for a few days. Yeah. He was sweating.
Is this what he does all day, every day?
He probably just did that all day, every day. Just go to bathrooms and look at guys' dick.
What a terrible life. So what did you say to him?
Get the fuck away from me. In those days, I had no tolerance for that stuff. Like, I didn't understand it. I was out of New York. I was still a little fucked up. I carried a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So I always carried a weapon in those days. So I just told him, get the fuck away from me. I don't know if I had a weapon on me that day or not, but that's when I carried a weapon, 85. In San Francisco, I carried a weapon. I always had something on me because that's a scary fucking town. But
especially back then. It's not that scary now. There's some shitty parts, but
the Tenderloin still has his moments. Lee was up there. He says a little.
I mean, it was. There were some parts that like weren't great, but then like we were reading reviews for our hotel, and they're like, "It's scary." It's not scary. You just don't be stupid. But it was. You told me about that. I can't believe they have topless coffee bars. That seems
crazy.
At that
time, Fat Ron's or something, Ron's Coffee House, and it was open 24 hours. That was.
Jesus.
I think you could put booze in the coffee.
Yeah. And they were topless, baristas, yeah. Or whatever.
They had like girls that were regular bartenders, and they had topless fucking.
You could bring your own booze, or they would actually throw booze in there on the DL.
They threw booze in there. At that time, I didn't drink fucking coffee. I drank a Coke and a buttered roll for breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was ready to go. There was no cereal. There was no oatmeal. There was no apple.
Right.
It was a buttered roll and a fucking can of Coke, dog, and a joint. Fuck it with a straw. A Coke with a straw. The carbonation would fucking rattle your head in those days.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So what's been going on, brother? Talk to me.
Not much, man. I actually just me and Sam Tripoli just in San Francisco, and then I was in the Midwest for 5 months before that. Getting clean, quit drinking again, quit doing drugs again. You know. I mean, I never really Tripoli always jokes. He's like, dude, you never had a drug problem, really. I would do coke. Absolutely. I'd smoke pot 24/7. I don't count pot as shit. Pot, but, you know, if you have a problem with pot, you have deeper fucking, you're just a pussy or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, something's wrong with you if pot's making your life crazy. But, you know, I would do coke just to fucking sober back up and keep drinking. But Tripoli's always like, dude, you're like a 1945 drinker. You know what I mean? Like, that's like your past life was like, Mad Men and shit. You know what I mean?
How much did you drink towards the end? What were you drinking?
I mean, I it's hard to tell. I mean,
but would you start at 9? Would you start?
I would
at
start. I mean, if I was tying it on for the day, I'd probably start around 11 a.m. You know, I'd probably have 6 to 8 beers, Jack and Coke or two, and then go out. You know,
no nap.
No.
Fuck no.
Were you hungover from the day before?
Not really. I never really got hungover, which is a dangerous thing. You know,
Jesus, cause
I wouldn't get that hungover.
I was never the guy. Like, drinking has never been my thing. But like, if I was going to go, I'd get drunk. But then, I could never understand going out Thursday through Saturday. Even just that was crazy to me because how you feel like I felt like shit the next day.
That's just because you're not a drinker,
right?
Well, I never got like hungover. But like a couple times. But normally, it's just like it takes it out of you. Like, yeah, I always woke up at 6 a.m. After going to bed at 2, like it was just it's like a really taxing, like alcohol. It's taxing. It makes you tired the next day. At least for me,
it takes a lot to recovery from the sugar. How old were you when you had your first drink?
I didn't start drinking until late. I was like 19.
Did you consider yourself an alcoholic at the time you?
Turned yourself in? But I mean, even then, like even when I was 19, I was like, there was a part in my fucking soul or head or some shit that was like, I am going to have a problem with this. You know, both my father was an alcoholic. Both sets of my grandparents were big drinkers. You know, they were from that kind of like Sinatra era of, they, you know, it was really romantic kind of fucking, you know, get dressed, G'd up, have a nice hat on, go out and tie it on, you know, big smokers and shit. But I do recall like even maybe 2021 being like, I'm gonna have to keep my eye on this shit because this could run amok with me, you know, and it took a while. You know, for all my 20s, I was, you know, I drank a lot and partied a lot, but that's what everybody does in their 20s, you know. But it wasn't until my, like, mid-30s I started, you know, it just wasn't fun anymore. I was just doing it, just, it just became a part of, in a lot of ways, my everyday. You know, and you're always at comedy clubs, and it's always free to get, you know, and then you're always like, I'm just going to have one or two drinks. There's no point to me.
You're a great social drinker.
To have one or two drinks.
No, but I could tell that you, see, you could lure me in.
Oh, absolutely.
There's people who are fucking sleeping pills, but there's certain people I used to like to drink with, even though I'm not a drinker.
Yep.
And I could see, I grew up in the area you're talking about, which is what makes me walk around even more shameful.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Mission Impossible the other night. It's on Channel 20. Mm-hmm. And there was a scene where
Peter the old Graves, show itself?
The old not show
the movies.
Itself.
Yeah, okay. No. Yeah, yeah.
He walks into a guy's house to talk to him, and the first thing you did in the 60s on television when
or
a man walked into your house was you turned around. You didn't even ask.
No.
There wasn't like, Leah, you want a breakfast drink? No, no, no. You came here to bother me in my office. We might as well have a drink.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he turned
and it was
around,
a real drink.
And they open up a thing and they put ice cubes in there. They already had ice cubes. That to me was the most fucking amazing thing in the
totally
world.
Totally agree.
And then they show a bottle with no label on it. Nope. It was brown. And there was one that was white.
Yep.
And they poured the brown. You didn't ask your host, whiskey or gin. You just poured them.
Yep.
And you said like this and you tapped. And after the first drink, so what brings you to my home?
Exactly.
Well, Jason Tebow, with the, and Austin, you, in that same scene, you, uh-huh. the guy would turn and offer you a cigarette. And right there, he'd start smoking a cigarette on television. That's what men did in those days on TV.
I think it still exists, but for me, it's like having a bar that I go to every day after work. Like, I don't have that, and I feel ashamed sometimes.
I have that. I have that, that I was, I grew up in a bar.
Me too.
And I saw the social drinking, and I never liked the end result.
Mm-hmm. Me
too. I never liked the end result. I always enjoyed the let's get a drink. I remember the first time somebody asked me to go get a sociable. I felt like a fucking man.
Yeah.
I was like 16 and a half.
Sure.
And he asked me to go to Ludi. In those days when somebody asked you to go to Ludi was let's do a lute.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple lutes. Let's split a lute and go get a sociable. And I never forget him like drinking at the bar, having a drink at 2 in the afternoon. And being so excited, but it was such a letdown. Like, all right, so we had a drink. Now what?
Right.
And I go home and I feel like shit. But what saved me all those years, because there's nothing I love more than a cold, 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 cold can of Budweiser.
Mm-hmm.
That is my blood. If I was in it, when I got coked up, if you asked me, if I gave you an 8-ball, Joey, what are you going to get? I'd get a case of cans, go home, and put 12 in the fucking freezer.
Yep.
And every time I take one out of the freezer, I put another 6-pack. I love my cans of Bud.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do a line and drink a half of that motherfucker cold. I don't know nothing else. I don't know about your Fat Tire, which I do like Fat Tire with the mm-hmm. lemon in it. I don't know about these other ales and all this shit. I know the juice for cocaine. But today, I couldn't drink 2 beers. When I did coke, I could drink those 24 cans and 3 hours.
Absolutely.
And not be hungover the next
day. Would you be drunk?
Not at all.
Oh, I'd be. I like the taste of that beer.
Because, like, whenever I get. I smoke and then try to drink, I don't get drunk. Like, if I'm already high, I don't get drunk. So, does it work?
Well, it's because you think you have 6 beers, but you probably just sip on one for, like.
No, I'm a. Like, I don't like beer. I'm a hard liquor guy. So, like, I was wondering, like.
Yeah, he always drinks the whiskey and the coke, whatever the fuck. Yeah.
I like Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark.
Yeah, I was a whiskey guy myself. Whiskey and beer were really all that I really
Jameson's
ever would drink.
Or what did you.
You pretty much, you name it. If it was brown.
Yeah, I liked
it. I was down.
When I drank whiskey for those 2 or 3 years, I liked it. I liked how the whiskey and the coke felt.
Sure.
Oh, whiskey and cocaine with some reefer.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Yeah.
I used to be hooked on Harvey's Bristol Cream. I used to take this girl down the shore, and that's the only thing that ever made my dick hard for longer than a minute. I'd have to drink Harvey's Bristol Cream on the rocks. It was like a stronger Irish cream at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my dick would stay hard on coke with that shit for some reason.
Really?
I never drank it again. I don't know what the fuck happened, but I get fucking... Once I started
Soaking your dick in that shit.
Oh, my God. Once I started getting hungover, I'm like, Lee, that's the part where I don't like.
So you're not a big... I never thought of you, you know, I've known you a long time, as like a big drinker. I know you had a big coke past.
But
I do remember some of your coke days.
But you give me 4 lines of coke.
Yes.
And you're done. You
See,
have,
that's what I mean.
You have alcohol in your house, mm-hmm. it's done.
Absolutely.
Once I went to your house and there's four lines of Coke and you said, Joey, why don't you just hang out here?
Yeah.
And I go, what do you have to drink? I got two cases of beer. I got two bottles of whiskey. Yeah. After about 2 hours, you're like, I don't see Joey a drinker, but he's giving me a run for my
money. See, I was the opposite. I would drink 8-9 beers, and then I'm like, hey, this guy's got Coke. I'll do Coke. I was the opposite way. I would
get
hammered.
Now when you do the Coke, how would the beer feel? Now you would drink them like water.
Now
I can. Basically going like this with your dick in your hand.
Yep.
Pissing them out. It's amazing.
It really is.
Once you have a gram of Coke in your lee, you're basically drinking to hydrate, and the body just pisses it out.
And like I would literally like be like at a party or something like this, and somebody would have, you know, a fucking gram or whatever the fuck. Like, hey, I left something for you in the back of the toilet. You know that, you know, the top of the toilet, put a little Kleenex over it or something. Like, hey, I left you a couple bumps or something. And I would fuck it, you know, and I'd be so drunk. You know, I got a whole bottle of Jack Daniels in me. Jesus. And I would stumble to the bathroom, and everybody would be like, well, that guy's probably going to go in there and die, puke. I would do a couple bumps, and I would come back out sober as fuck. And now I can start over. Now I can, you know, it would erase all that you would drink, and now you could drink for 2-3 straight days. Coke, you know, you go to, like, any meetings or any 12-step program or any kind of rehabs or anything like that, and people would be like, you'll always hear alcoholics or people that have a drinking problem be like, the minute I found cocaine, I was a ticking time bomb. Because now you're indestructible with your drinking. You know, now I could, you know, you could get drunk as fuck, do two lines of Coke, and then start drinking again. You know, so it's like, you know, one hand would wash the other. And then it's, you know, 9 months later and, you know, you're selling your car. You know, you're sucking dick for fucking
I remember drinking shit that I would never drink sober.
Ugh, that's the worst.
Like drinking gin on the rocks. Gin's terrible. I would never drink that sober, but when that cocaine's in your body burning, you got to turn that fire down with alcohol.
Straight up. I was going to say, how did you stay so skinny?
I don't know. I've just always had the metabolism of a crack addict.
Because, I mean, were you having all just straight liquor, like shots, or would you have actual drinks?
No, I would usually go like Jack and Cokes. Whiskey Neat was another one of my go-tos. Just put it in a glass, fuck face. You know what I mean? No ice. No, I don't have time for that bullshit. I don't have time for all the sugar from Coke. After a while, I'd be Scotch Neat, Whiskey Neat.
Oh,
but beers, I would pound beers.
A little Dew's on the rocks.
Absolutely.
With a can of Bud, a Bud can cold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't even want the frosty mug. Take that frosty mug and shove it up your ass with the ranch dressing.
Yep.
Give me the fucking can with a fucking napkin around me. I want my skin to stick to that fucking can. That's how I cold. I want it. That's how cold. When I was in high school, there was a guy named Ernie who had a bar on 39th Street, where they buried my mother's cemetery. Ernie served anybody. As long as you had cash, Ernie served you.
Uh-huh.
And he used to give you those beers that looked like a mug, like a keg.
Oh, Heineken's?
No.
Heineken's had those fat ones.
Those little Rheingolds. And we would fucking bang on his door at 5 in the morning. And you could see him through the hole sleeping on the pool table. And you get up. What the fuck you want?
We
want
to give you $2 more for a beer, mister.
Ernie, we need two cases. Who the fuck is this? Coco, I was just here 4 in the morning. Come on, I gave you a bump. He was around the corner from where the flower guy was.
Yeah, I know. You took us there.
I took him to Ernie.
Oh, really? That's cool.
I took him to Ernie's. Ernie's was a fucking, that guy was
Is he great. Still alive, this guy?
I don't even think Ernie's was open. I think it's a Spanish bar. It's Ernesto's now.
Uh-huh.
It belongs to some Spanish bar.
Ernesto's.
So what morning did you wake up? And you said, this is it, I got to do something.
You know, it was probably, it wasn't really just I think it was like a couple weeks of just like sick of shit being the same. You know, work on a TV show during football season, the Red Zone channel. That job was up. My sublease was up. So I was like, I can get a new apartment. And I was crashing it on Tripoli's couch. I was crashing in my girlfriend at the times. You know, I was just kind of like in this limbo. You know, I was going in like the store and the improv and the ice house every night just because I knew I could knock down a bunch of free booze, just pissing through cash. It just felt like Groundhog's Day. You know, it was like the same fucking day. The weather here was the same every day. Everything just felt like the same fucking shit. And I was like, you know, I had opportunity to go back to my old hometown right outside Chicago. There's a recovery house there that I knew from when I was sober before because I was sober for like 3 years. And then I started drinking again. I went out for like 2 years. And it was way worse the second time than it was.
Yeah, the first. Your addiction grows.
Oh, yeah. It was way worse. And I was just like having thoughts like, man, I should just fucking, if I get a gun, man, I could just fucking kill myself. Then you start thinking about the shit you gotta throw out before you kill yourself, you know, all this shit. And I'm like, what the fuck? What? This is fixable. Like, I just need to go away for a while, you know? So I was gonna leave for 90 days. I was gonna go to this recovery house, and I wound up going. So I wound up staying in my hometown for like another 3 months after being there. And then, so I didn't. I did one gig with Ren Azizi first week I was in Chicago area, because I already had it booked with them. And then I started going to this recovery house, and then I didn't do any gigs for like two and a half months. Just going to 2 to 3 meetings a day. I was seeing a addiction therapist twice a week. And then I was working at a Habitat for Humanity. Cold winter, cold, like 2 degrees without the wind. Just, it would just, it'd be 1 o'clock in the afternoon, sun would be up, and you'd look at the thermometer, just say 2. You know, like, fuck.
You're building houses.
One house, yeah, we just did one house.
You did a whole house, the whole, because I did that in South Carolina, but I was only there for like a week. So, like, you were there for the entire time?
No, when I got there, they were about, like, half done with it. And when I left, they were almost. I think they just finished it this week because a friend of mine just sent me a picture of it and shit.
That's what Hitler told the Jews. It's Habitat for Humanity. Get in there. Yeah. You're going to build houses, some buffets and shit.
Everything's, I think there's, I saw a unicorn in there. It looks awesome.
Unfucking believable. Unfucking believable. So, you go to this Habitat for Humanity. Do they pay? No.
Well, I did two different things there. One, I worked at this place called The Restore, where people would donate, you know, you're getting your kitchen redone, you could donate all, you could either try to sell all your old countertops, or you could donate it to Habitat for Humanity, you get a tax write-off, and they would come pick it up. So it was like a professional mover. Like every day I would, you know, one day a week I would do that. And then we just have, like, going to these four houses, had a big-ass fucking U-Haul truck that they own, and then we would just go there and just haul shit out. And it, that was brutal. That was the worst, because it was always somebody had a fucking grand piano that they built the house around. You don't know, no clue how to get it through any of these doors.
Brutal.
So going on third floor, you got a fucking shitty dolly. You know, you don't want to not fuck up their stairs. And it was just shit people wanted to get rid of.
And then there's snow on the ground.
Ice. One time we had to move a fucking piano out of a church basement. They're gutting this church. So they leave. They're like, go in, you guys take whatever the fuck you want. Just clear it all out, because whatever you don't take, we're going to have to throw out. So going there, we're there all day. We're fucking moving on this shit. And the worst thing was this fucking one of them, you know, those elementary school, like they would like stand up pianos, not a grand piano, but it'd just be like a wall
the
piano.
The one you could like roll around?
Yeah, you think you could roll it around. But we got to go up this fucking ramp, like a handicap ramp going outside. But it is stone fucking full of ice. I mean, it's the dead of fucking February. So we go out and I got a crowbar. And this other guy that I work with, who's probably got about 90 pounds on you, and you got about 3 inches on him, right? This guy. And he's got a hammer. So we got a hammer and a crowbar. We're on our hands and knees just breaking all this ice up so we can push this shitty fucking piano all the way up. And then when we got it to the top of the driveway, we had to get it up this truck with all this ice. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. So I would do that, and that would pay. That paid. So I got to make a little money when I was doing that shit. And then when I would work on the house, that was like volunteering. So you're just doing drywall and a lot of painting doors, painting trim, just any kind of shit. There was like a contractor there. Just be like, you know, what do you want me to do today? He'd be like, yeah, go fucking paint that wall, whatever the fuck. And you would just do it. You know, and just got me so out of it. Not only was it different shit I was doing, I was around like real Midwest people. Nobody was constantly on their fucking cell phone. No one was wrapped up in their own shit. No one's constantly asking you about your resume. You know, you were just in real life. But the weather was so different than 82 and sunny every day that it just felt like I wanted to feel like myself again. Really, really, that's really what I was really trying to get back. You know, I wanted to get some time under my belt of not drinking every day or 5 days a week or whatever the fuck. But I really just wanted to fucking feel like myself again. Like the guy that moved out that was happy and hopeful and, you know, gave a fuck. I didn't give a fuck anymore, Joe. You know what I mean? I really quit giving a fuck. About 2 months.
I love the one thing you did. You did the smartest thing that nobody ever thinks about. Everybody always is looking. When I got fucked up in 92, I was really bad shape after my divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I kept sitting there, and I kept going, what am I going to do? I can't afford to live. I mean, I was in that borderline type of stuck that you can't even get out of bed.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of a really sort of depression. But I still had enough money to do blow every night.
Absolutely.
You know, every night I went downstairs and stole a gram from the fucking landlord. I still had money to do blow. And I cracked up my car.
You find a way.
And I remember I said, fuck this. And I called my buddy and go, dog, I'm lost. I need for you to send me money for a plane ticket. And I knew a guy, and I bumped like 2,000 Valiums. I told him I'll be back in a week.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I wasn't coming back in a fucking 2, week.
2,000
Valiums. Oh, yeah. He's like, take this. You can make $10,000. All I needed was startup money.
Yeah.
And that was it. He gave me 2,000. And this guy had killed somebody at some tavern. He had just got out of jail. He was the lock guy at Boulder Chrysler Plymouth something. Uh-huh. And I became friends with him. He was one of those guys that were, if I was 20-something, he was 50, but he still listened to AC/DC, man.
Yeah, he was a young 50.
Two kids. No, he wasn't a young 50. He had shunned heroin for 30 years of his life, then did 20 years in prison.
Jesus.
He was out, and now he had like two kids. One was like 2, and the other one was 4. He was working as a lot man. Remember the type of people I told you I didn't want to be? When I saw him, I'm like, this is what I'm going to end up being.
Yeah. I saw a lot of that too.
Yeah,
myself.
You saw a lot of that.
There was a lot. I mean, I don't want
to. But you went home.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best thing to do is go home, go to your old bedroom, walk around your neighborhood, walk around your school to remember who the fuck you were.
Dude, that was so key.
That is so key. And nobody does that. No, I'm going to go somewhere. Listen, you want to get cleaned up, go back to your neighbor. Go to your grandma's school. Walk the stairs. Because what's going to come back to you is what you were thinking about at that age.
It's exactly what happened.
Of who you wanted to be.
Totally happened.
Now you're pounding nails. Every fucking nail you pound and cold you are, now you're thinking about your life and when you went wrong.
Yep.
It's quiet. You have an iPod on or whatever the fuck you got in your head, and you're just nailing. You know, if I come to you, when you're rehabbing, like whatever it is, drugs, a girlfriend threw you out, somebody died, don't get a job where you have to talk to people.
Mm-mm.
You want to think. Apply for a painter's job.
Mm-hmm.
You come to work, you smoke a fucking Tootsie-Roots, you put your little Van Halen on, you come up, you tape the walls, you sand them, you put the holes in, and you're by yourself.
Yep.
And sometimes, and without the phone, and without people calling you and saying, hey, how much would you charge me for this gig?
Yep.
And without somebody coming up to you and saying how funny you are, how come you're not getting spots? That shit will fucking wear on you.
Dude, and it was like 2 years of that. That it really, I mean, it felt like, because it was always feels like the same day in L.A. It felt like 4 or 5 months. But then every now and then some shit would happen where I'd be like, oh, fuck, yeah, it's been like this for 2 years. Like, nothing's going to fucking change if I don't change something.
The worst feeling in the world is to be stuck.
Yep.
Lee has issues. We spoke last night. You know, I've always had issues with it. You know, sometimes you're stuck in a comedy. Sometimes it's stuck, and you know when you're stuck.
Relationship, you know when you're stuck.
Both fucking angles, somebody's going to get pissed.
And stuck doesn't even really mean bad, necessarily.
No,
I called you last night because I was thinking about it. I was up to like 3 in the morning. Just it's crazy that I went to college, and you have to do that now to get a job. But now I'm 27, and I'm just now figuring out what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I want to do, but not really, because I know, like, because who knows how long podcasting is going to last. I'd love to do this for another 40 years, but who knows what will happen. So I was just thinking last night, like, I don't know where I want to go, and I turned my TV off, and I folded shirts for, like, 2 hours. And I think I figured something out, and we'll see. But I always knew what I wanted to do. I went to a college where if you didn't know what you wanted to do, if you wanted to switch majors, you had to transfer because there's like 2 majors. So it's a weird place for me. I'm not used to being here.
Being stuck in careers, like you mentioned something really interesting, which I want to talk to you about before I forget.
Sure.
What year did we shoot that porno video?
Huh?
Which one?
The one we did by the pool where I got into the argument with the chick.
Oh, shit. I forgot about
me,
that.
Me, you, Tripoli.
No, it was Duncan.
Oh, my God.
It was me and Duncan that went to that.
And
at
who
that
else?
It was at that mansion.
Right.
It was fucking there. There was another
comic. Tripoli was there. And Ahmed.
Ahmed was there. I came with Duncan, but Tripoli was there.
And did Duncan perform, too?
Duncan. No. We just knew you were performing. Because we were all, that was like, dude, that was like 97, 98. Because we all had just kind of moved out here and started, like, you know, getting to know who's who. And we, you were one of our favorites.
No,
we,
Duncan.
He was still Mitzi's driver. He wasn't even town coordinator yet. He was driving Mitzi around. Because Mitzi let him, Mitzi Shore, who's the owner of the Comedy Store, Mitzi let him use her, because she wasn't driving anymore at that point in time. And Mitzi let him use her old Jaguar because his car broke down. So he had Mitzi's, like, 1986 fucking Jaguar for about a year, maybe 2 years. She's just use it. I don't use it. It's just collecting dust. So he was driving her, like, pimped out. So we thought we were balling, man. We had a 10-year-old Jaguar. We were driving to this mansion in the hills to watch Joey Diaz.
It was crazy.
That was crazy. It was like a Girls Gone Wild, like,
that's what they wanted to do. Thing.
Yeah.
But was it like a comedy special?
No. It was like like there was
Girls Gone Wild with comedy, yep. Sex shows.
Yep. There was topless girls playing volleyball in the pool.
Ugly as fuck. And the girls that were hot had clothing on. They were like fake models that, like, an agency sent. And I remember I kept saying shit to the one girl, and she walked away. She's like, fuck you or something.
Yeah, you got into it with some girl. You were hilarious.
Oh, my God. We tormented this girl.
Yeah.
Because you knew she wanted to talk to us, but she was acting stuck up. And once I yelled at and called her a dirty bitch, then I couldn't get her off me. It was hilarious. Once you insult a woman, she was done. She kept, like, coming over, and the more she drank, she'd give me the evil eye. Once they start giving you evil eye, they're going to suck your dick. You know what I'm saying? They give you, like, evil eye, like, he's got me, this motherfucker. I started tormenting him. There was a little room, like a guest room.
There was a few of them.
And I remember the guy that came with his wife and was letting guys fuck his wife.
Yeah, uh-huh. There's all kinds of shit like that
going on. At the shoot?
Oh, there was all kinds of shit like that going on. Like, it was a big compound, disgusting. Like, huge house in the hills, but it was at the top of this hill. So they had a pool, they had a pool house, they had the regular house. And then they had all this food set up and free. Everything was free. Food was free. Drinks were free.
Weed.
Cocktails,
the guy told me if you come
weed,
up,
there'll
be 20 joints for you in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
There was 20 joints for me. We smoked one after the other, and there was another pound going around.
Yeah, so you would walk around smoking joints. You would
take joints.
Free. Everything was free.
How long were you there?
All day.
Oh, fucking all day.
All day.
11 to 9.
It was like a giant pool party.
Like a week.
And they paid me like $300, $400, $500. Ahmed set it up.
Yeah.
It was not Ahmed.
I think Sergio Love might have been there.
Sergio Love was there giving out that fake blow. Last night I was taking a shit. And I was thinking about Sergio Love. And Sergio Love used to have the worst blow in the world. The worst.
Absolutely. You didn't even know if it was working.
He would call me the next day and ask me how it was. And I go, it's great. It was filled with amino acids. That's why you're getting so big, Sergio. Those things are just protein powders. Fuck you. I just got, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. I would just torment him. And
so why would you buy it?
Because he confronted me at 4 in the morning.
I know. It's the only fucking option you had. You just roll the dice.
He was the last package of the night Coke.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't. Sometimes he gave you a good batch. Sometimes I go and he'd be passed out and I'd go in his pocket. And he charged me for one, but I'd take three. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit like that. Sergio was priceless. The best was the night he left me a gram in a motorcycle pouch. And when I went to the pouch, a white chick came from the shadow. She's like, where's Sergio? It was the scariest thing in the world. It was the white chick that tried to kill herself at the Comedy Store way before you guys' time. There was a white waitress there that was very sweet. Mm-hmm. And she started messing around with the black manager that was hanging around there a couple of years ago again.
Oh.
That came back as a comic. When he came back from Texas, I have not seen him in a while.
A black manager.
And he was hanging out with Yorsi or somebody. And he was hanging out with this white chick, and he broke her heart. And she tried to kill herself, and then she had to quit the store. Nobody remembers her name. I asked my wife the other day. My wife remembers the situation. It was kept hush-hush at the store. They just got rid of her. She went away. Sergio bumps into her at a bar in fucking Hollywood, takes her home, fucks the shit out of her. Now she's in love with Sergio.
Of course.
So she's stalking Sergio, and she was in his garage, hidden. In those days, he'd say, I'll leave you the Coke in the pouch. I'd have to open up his garage and go get the Coke. She was already in the garage waiting for him, guys.
Yeah.
I almost had a fucking heart attack. So the rumor was that Sergio had given the Coke to Freddie the night he died.
I'd heard that, yeah.
But the real story was that Sergio walked in as Freddie was leaving. Freddie was waiting for Sergio, but him and his cousin went somewhere else to get the blow.
Mm-hmm.
So the word on the street was that Sergio's coke had killed him. The little rumor at the Comedy Store.
Which, that place is terrible for that shit.
It's terrible. For Eleanor wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
Ari was mad at Sergio. You know, Ari till this day is still not cool with Sergio. He always says it's the coke. He's always coked up. But it's all because of Freddie Soto. Yeah. Because in the back, but Freddie died from alcohol with the Valiums. They said they didn't find them.
Now, that's what I'd always heard. But right. then just going to the store a lot, you hear those
right.
rumors.
You heard the other thing.
This place is terrible.
So at that time, the Longest Yard had just come out. And I was on the road every week. And when Freddie died, I was on the road. I didn't go to the funeral or the wake. And we're talking about a comic named Freddie Soto. And I'll never forget. I was just thinking about this last night.
He's the first person to ever bring me up at the Comedy Store. In the OR. In the OR.
Good kid. And first I remember that fucking... Sergio called me in Atlanta one night. I was in Atlanta at the before it was this club that it is now. Not the Improv, not the
Punchline. The Laughing Skull?
Before Laughing Skull, that guy kid, the manager there, had a different bar.
Okay.
They had two comedy clubs, one there and one in Toledo, Ohio. And I was there for the weekend. I was dying, Tebow, dying a slow death. They were all Adam Sandler fans, and they would see my set and run the fuck out of there. Mm.
That they were going to do, like, the Hanukkah song?
Oh, my God. I was horrible. And I went back to my hotel room, and I'm sitting there debating my life. I had no blow. And the phone rings. It's Sergio Love. And I'm talking to Sergio. And I'm like, sir. And in the middle of all this, I go, Sergio, can I talk? Like, I knew Sergio. Sergio was my buddy. I love Sergio.
I've known him for a very long time.
I love Sergio with all my heart.
I have no problem with him at all. I love him.
And I go, Sergio, can I talk to you about something? There's a word going on in the street, a rumor. He's like, what are you talking about? I go, listen, there's a rumor that your coke killed Freddie. He's like, no, I didn't give it to him. I go, because it would be fucked up that for years I've been buying coke from you, and the one night you get good coke, the motherfucker dies. Oh, my God. There was silence, and all of a sudden we both busted out because I kept my fucking, I sold it.
Yeah.
I'm like, the one night you get good coke, it kills fucking Freddie.
Uh-huh. I remember, man, he used to, this might be after you probably quit doing coke or whatever, but he used to live in this, like, hotel, like, real, almost like a high-rise hotel.
Sergio.
Yes. On Sunset.
Okay, that was after.
Big black building on Sunset. Kind of like east, kind of by where the radio tower is, you know, that, like, KTLA or whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah.
A big black building. But I guess there was condos in there or something like that. He was living in there. And that's where his guy, his hookup or whatever back in the day. I'm not even sure that building is still functional, but you would... The parking garage was in the basement of it, and you had to have this passcode. You know, if you were staying at the hotel, they would give you the code, then you can push the, you know, four numbers, and then you can go into the bottom garage. Well, you would text, you know, what's up, or what's the numbers, or whatever. They would know that you were looking for coke. They would just text you the code. You would pull right into this hotel, type it in, go into the little basement. Motherfucker's standing right there just waiting for you for whatever you wanted. And then you would give him give him money, he would give you coke. It was like a drive-through.
How do you guys know the same dealer? Did he, like, hang out at the store?
Well, no, he wasn't the dealer, but you could get coke from him because of his guy, but he's a comic.
He was a comic.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was a comic.
But anybody that does coke in L.A. knows some of the... Eventually, you're going to cross and know, like, oh, yeah, I know that dude. I got some coke from that guy or whatever. I used to have this English guy, the name of English Dave. He's like a pretty big, like, coke dealer back in the day. In Hollywood, this is like the late 90s, early 2000s, and back at the Coach and Horses, remember that bar?
Yes.
It's something else now, but back then, that was like a fucking great dive bar. You know, Gary Shandling, a lot of people would just go in there because you could just hide in the shadows. It's crowded with 40 people in there, you can't even move. It's a small dive bar. But that's where this guy would always set up shop. And he would always do the same gag to anybody new that was getting coke. From him, you know, if you get a hookup and he'd be like, yeah, this guy's cool, you have to introduce him the first time. And then he would be like, hey, be cool, just slide me, you know, give me the money under the bar. You know, he'd hand him $60 under the bar. And then he'd, you know, like, there's people around, so you got to be really cool. And then he would throw it on the ground and he'd be like, you dropped your package right there. You know what I mean? And everybody would look and you would have to pick the coke up off the floor like a jackass. He did that to everybody, and every time somebody new would come by, you'd be like, hey, man, get him with it. You know what I mean? Make him look like a fucking dick.
I'd fucking die if he did that. I think I'd kill him right there on the spot.
Really?
You dropped your packy.
I think one of the highest nights ever on coke, I was in the Coach and Horses. I had gone from, this is 98, I had gone for an audition downtown, and I got lost, and I ended up in Echo Park. and I'm getting a flat tire. I can feel it going, buck, 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 buck. I'm like, God damn, I'm right there.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm driving, the park is, I'm behind that Cuban neighborhood. I didn't know it was a Cuban neighborhood then. And I'm stuck at a light, and all of a sudden I see two cop cars go, they get out, and they pull their weapons, and they shoot the fucking guy. This is my first 6 months in L.A., maybe.
Oh, shit.
I see the guy go down, then the police helicopter comes, and all of a sudden the cop cars are coming up.
Oh, my God.
So I turn around, I get out of there, and I don't know who to call. So I call Marilyn Martinez.
Uh-huh, of course.
And Marilyn Martinez goes, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send over Dave, my husband. And Dave took the tire off, took it right there, and I go park up the hill. There's a tire place for $5, got a new tire. And we got to talking, and he goes, have you ever met my brother-in-law? He's a Cuban dude. He just got out of the chair. You want to go meet him? I go, yeah, let's go over there. We went over there. The guy's like, you snort coke? Yeah. He goes, let me give you an eight ball.
How does this always happen to you?
This was crazy. He goes, if you like it, come back. He goes, I charge like $125 for eight balls, but it was all the way in Echo Park. I take that eight ball. I go home. I do two bumps of it. It is out of this world.
Oh, shit.
It is like the best coke I've done in 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm jawing. I'm fucking seeing things. I got two lines in me. Next thing you know, I'm fucking going for broke. I called Josh Wolf. We go over there. We start pounding over there. We walk over to Coaching Horses. And who's in Coaching Horses but Stanhope and David Fulton? I'll never forget going up to those guys, and I could not sit there. Like, when Stanhope says to you, hey, dog, you better go outside.
That's
like, I remember smoking and the cigarette was moving with my jaw. Like, yeah, it was just horrible. I couldn't contain my jaw.
That's like Miles Davis going, man, you're really black.
And I went, and I fucking left there and walked to Vista, where Josh Wolf lived on that street. And I had a car there.
Yeah.
I had my car there, and I went, and I put the air on, and I just pushed the seat back, and I laid back there till 4 in the morning. I must have had another 2 grams in my pocket. I didn't touch it.
Wow.
That coke carried me through. It was that strong. I sat there, fucking jaw, couldn't focus, couldn't jerk off, couldn't get a hard on. I couldn't do dick. I was so fucked up on that dude. That was my last Coaching Horse. I was never really a big coach. I think in my whole life, I was there the night the chick smacked Rogan in the face. Back when the first year of news radio, he walked in there. Some chick went up to him drunk and started, you know, because only in this town would somebody take television that seriously.
Yeah.
They went up to him. I wasn't even standing. I was like 10 feet away. He was talking to like 3 girls.
Uh-huh.
And some girl was talking about a cat. I'll never forget that conversation. And the girl reached over and just smacked Joe. And Joe grabbed her hand and was like, what the fuck are you doing? And she went off about news radio, that he had said something, and his face. That's when he didn't smoke pot. I thought he was going to crush her wrist with his hand.
A lot of people don't remember those days.
That he didn't smoke pot.
Not only did he not smoke it, he used to be so mean to us.
And uptight and uptight.
Oh, you guys are going to go smoke your dummy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Smoke
yeah.
your dummy cigarettes and get stupid?
Oh, my God. He used to
And then he starts smoking pot when I quit, and it's like, I'm like, I can't win with Joe Rogan. I can't win with you, kid.
He used to torment Ralphie May. He used to ask us, you want to come over to the strip club? No. What are you guys going to do? Sit here and smoke that shit? That dummy shit, you fucking losers. I sit there and go, you don't know what you're missing, cocksucker.
Well, now he does, and now he's like, oh, you don't want to expand your mind, you dummy? I'm like, I'm always a dummy with you. Why? I can't win, man. I'm always a dummy.
Now, what made you, when did you know you were ready to come back?
It was a combination of things. In August, that working on writing on that football show starts back up.
Okay.
And, you know, I really wanted to get 90 days. That was my goal. I couldn't get 30 in L.A. for fucking a year. So I was like, man, I just want to get 90 days. And then once I got to 90 days, I was like, I started booking gigs at Zany's, the Laugh Factory, all these different clubs in Chicago. I love that town so much. And it's about a 40-minute train ride from my hometown. Shout out to Michigan City, Indiana. Right in Lake Michigan. It's about a 40-minute train ride. So I would take the train in the city, start doing gigs. But I didn't want to just come back to L.A., start going to the Comedy Store, start doing the same old shit I was doing. That was a big fear of mine. That I was going to come back and shit was just going to be right back to where it was. And I would just lose whatever. So it really was part of I don't say reinventing myself, but feeling like my fucking self again. That's where I started gigging. You know, when I was 20, I started in Chicago, started doing stand-up there, and I'm going to all these new clubs, the Up Comedy Clubs, beautiful up there. I love Zany's, one of my favorite clubs. Laugh Factory was super cool to me. So I was going in there doing, you know, 1 or 2 gigs a week, and I was just loving it, you know? And now it's starting to turn to spring, and everybody's in a fucking good mood, and everybody's so happy and nice, and the weather's, you know, so I'm like, I'm going to stick around on the 4th of July. You know, so I left. I came back like maybe the 10th or 9th or 10th of July. So once the spring started coming, it was getting really nice. We're almost done with that house. I kind of wanted to see that through and work through that job. And then I was like, I just randomly picked right after the 4th of July. You know, then I'll head back. But yeah, it really was weather. It was weather started to get nice. I had 4 months. I remember when February 1st, I did that gig with Steve, Ren Azizi. I took the train in Chicago. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I got off the train February 1st. And I'm walking up Michigan Avenue. And I'm fucking looking at my phone to see what the temperature is. And it was just straight up zero. Just nothing. It was dead even, 0 degrees, 31 mile an hour wind. So it was like 22 degrees below zero. And that, whatever you didn't have covered, I had like fucking long johns on, 2 pairs of socks, 2 pairs of gloves, a hat, 2 scarves. Just a little part of your face that maybe goggles could fit on, if that was covered, wasn't covered, it just felt like you were constantly getting slapped by someone with a big fat ass hand. It was just like getting slapped in the face repeatedly while every step you would take. So once the weather started to get nice and I was, you know, now I'm doing gigs again. I hadn't done gigs in like 3 months, and that's the longest I've gone in probably a decade of not gigging, you know. And I had new material, and I cut my hair, and I fucking started, you know, went clean shaven and all this shit, because I'm like, you know, my insides, I felt different on the inside. I didn't feel like that hopeless, like I want to fucking put a gun in my mouth, nothing's going to get any better. I didn't feel like that anymore. But every time I'd be brushing my teeth in the morning, I'd look at myself. I still look like the guy that used to fucking want to put a gun in his mouth. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to cut my hair, I'm going to shave, I'm going to fucking do all, you know, different things. So I just look different on the outside because I felt different on the inside. So when I was doing that and the weather got nice, I was like, I'm going to stick around here and do some gigs in Chicago and do some clubs that I don't usually get to do regularly. And everybody was so cool there. All the different clubs were just like, you know, let me call Avails in. And like, you know, as long as you're here, man, you know, just hit us up. Let us know what day you're in Chicago.
So Saturday will be 6 months.
Yes, sir.
And how do you feel? The truth, us as men, how do you feel?
I feel good. I feel, you know, I'm not going
to
sit here.
Do you want to go to the comedy store, have a cocktail, and get your dick sucked? That's the bottom line.
I'll take the latter. Of course, I want to get my next. But you know, I can't. There's just shit. You know, if I want things to be different, I have to do different things. That's the way I see it. So if I want to come back here, go to the comedy store when I don't have a spot, get there at 8, leave at 3, do that 5 nights a week. That's what I was doing. So if I start doing that shit again, I'm gonna feel like that again.
I'm not a whiner, and I'm not saying this in any negative form.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me leaving the store wasn't Tommy. It wasn't Rogan. It was, I just had to go.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't helping my addiction. I had to go. Mm-hmm. One thing about the store that, if you notice about the store, a lot of people go in and they get fucked up. When I first got here, there was 2 kids that were the nicest, sweetest kids in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what their fucking names were. It doesn't really matter. And one was a door guy, and we'd talk, and we'd smoke dope, and he'd tell me about how he got an agent, and you know, how, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's teamed up with 3 other fucking morons, and they were young kids,
mm-hmm.
and they're drinking, and I would get to the store at 9, you know, trying to get a fallout, because my spot was at 12:30,
sure.
I was a loser, I had nothing else going on,
absolutely.
And I'd go to the store at 9, and I'd have my Coke in my pocket, and I'd start drinking for free, and once I got off stage, that's when I hit the coke.
Sure.
And I seen these 3 kids just get sucked in.
Yep.
And next thing you know, I asked, where's the one kid? And they said, you don't know what happened? He OD'd on heroin in the back where they have the VIP now in the back.
I know who you're talking about.
He OD'd back there.
I know.
There was Larry Vazio was part of that crew.
I know exactly who you're talking
about. And I seen, and you know, you heard the stories of Kennison. You heard, you know, that place was a haven of death. From 80 to 94 or something.
Yeah.
And when I went in there, I'm not fucking blaming the comedy store at all, but no. You're there. And it's there. And it's $20. And you're with friends. Mm-hmm. And you're having a few drinks. And you're talking about comedy. And you know what? I don't really like talking to people, but you give me 3 lines, I'll talk to a fucking homeless guy for an hour about the history of fucking the United States or the movie Slash or whatever the fuck it is. You know
how his boner has stigmata?
Yeah. So... It really, when I wanted to stay clean, I knew the comedy store wasn't going to, it felt like I was going back to the place that took me down in a way. Like, I was like, you know what?
Yep.
Just something about that place, I got to stay out there. I got to find Joey again.
Yeah.
You know, my recovery, I did it in my apartment. There was no money. There was no flight to Jersey this last time. This was going to bed at 9 and forcing myself to go to bed so the addiction wouldn't wake me up at 10:30. And it did a couple nights.
Of course.
Addiction will wake your fucking shit up and go, have one drink, bro.
Absolutely.
It's fine. And I'm very fortunate that, yes, I smoke marijuana. And, yes, I had an Irish cream on the flight the other day. Mm-hmm. Right? I was fucked up on those stars. I was hitting this vapor pen. I might as well get a fucking Irish cream, right? I mean, an Irish cream, you can't get hooked on Irish. The right. Lady kept coming back going, you want another one? I'm like, no, it's a Bailey's. You
know? Yeah, I know.
Bailey's with a couple of ice cubes in the morning is delicious.
It's like someone being addicted to acid. It's like, yeah, no, you're not.
No.
There's no way.
So that's the extent of my drinking. But I'm very happy. I'm very happy for you because I got to tell you something. You have no idea what's coming down your road if you stick to this. And you know what, teams? Listen, if you smoke a hit of joint, I'm not going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
It's the devil that got you to that dance that you really have to focus on.
Sure.
In my world, when I sat down, I said, listen, weed never made me go to the ATM at 6 o'clock and cut and run red lights.
Absolutely.
Because at 8 o'clock, Tebow, my insides would burn. Tebow, my insides would burn. I can't even describe the... I couldn't even think. I remember my wife talking to me about life and what's coming on at 9:30. I couldn't even hear her. The things. You know, it was like, and eventually I just had to get up and I'd make believe I was doing something. I'd take the ATM card and run to the Rouse, Rock and Roll Rouse.
Yeah.
And I'd take $60 out and I'd go to Dee's house and pick up $60, all compadre, and pick up 4 packages. And once I had it in my hand, that released the anxiety. Now the anxiety was gone.
I can relate to that.
Now I got to deal with the 11:15 spot, and it's only 8:45. I would count the minutes. Count the fucking minutes. So I would.
You would never do blow before you went on.
No. I would go home, drop 2 packages off at the house, and take one in my pocket, and I put it in my top thing right here. And I
get 320. You get 3 separate 20 bags.
Whatever I would get. Whether it was 60 or 20. But here's the beauty of it. I would go up there. What's the biggest rumor about me? Dog, he leaves right after his set.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you knew. There wasn't a hello. There wasn't a picture. It was basically
outline of smoke where your body used to be. Like,
get the fuck away from me. It's over. Joe Rogan will be furious. Where'd Joey go? Uh-huh. Ask Redman. Where'd Joey go?
Yeah.
That motherfucker. I was the king.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way I wanted to hear what you had to say about my set. Comedy, whatever the fuck you thought, I didn't give a fuck. I would get that, I would pull out of the Comedy Store, cross over to the middle lane, make the left at the House of Blues, and pray for that light to be yellow as I was going down the hill, because that would give me 3 minutes to go in my pocket, take the bin. First off, before I crossed Sunset, I already had a dollar bill rolled up in my hand.
Oh, yeah.
And as I was driving east on Fountain, I would just be doing the 20. Until by the time I got to Hollywood, La Brea, by the time I got, I lived in Hollywood then. So I would drive on whatever. What's the road?
Fountain?
Fountain.
Yeah.
And once I hit La Brea, I throw the $20 bindle out the window. I was on fire.
I'm done with it.
Now it was a race to get home to take a shit and to hit the rest of that coke.
I would see, there was times where I, in my life, and I had a coke run of about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Like I said, it was really just to enhance my drinking. So I was never, but I can relate to everything you're saying. I had dudes that, like, if I went to coaching horses and I would just see English Dave, I'd see him sitting at the bar. Even if I just popped in there for a fucking afternoon pint or something, you know, I fucking go in there for the Budweiser, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. Pop in there for a drink, I see him sitting at the end of the bar, I immediately would have to shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the.
You
that's
see
the
coke guy.
Oh my God.
You would just see him, and you would have to shit.
Your insides would be so excited that you were gonna do blow. It's funny.
And I wasn't even planning on it. Wasn't even planning on seeing him. And I would make eye contact with him, and I'd be like, now I gotta shit.
Talking to you makes me think about my addiction, where it was in 94, 95. Mm-hmm. That was one of the best parts of my addiction because I was divorced. I was miserable, I was in pain, I was alone, and I was like a squirrel. What's those animals that gather nuts?
Yeah, squirrels.
Okay, so let's pretend for some reason I found $200. Vince would give me fucking an 8-ball, and I would front the gram in those days. Vince, come in, because as long as I had cash with the 8-ball, who's the gram for? It's for Jason. He's coming over later. I can see you tomorrow. I still owe Vince $1,800. I'm waiting to fight. I thought he would come to my shows in Denver. He still won't fucking. I love that kid with all my heart. But let's pretend I already had Vince figured out, and it was 2 in the afternoon. I'd watch TV till about 4, and at 4, I'd make my liquor run. That's an addict. I'd make my liquor run to this place in Boulder. I would go to Moe's Bagels and get a turkey sandwich with Swiss cheese, a tomato, and mayonnaise, and salt and pepper, heavy on the pepper. And I'd go next door, and I'd buy two six-packs of
enough to
fat
get you
tire,
to tomorrow.
Two six-packs of Fat Tire. In those days, what was I drinking? What was the heavy shit I was drinking? I forget what the fuck it was. Gin and tonics, maybe.
Okay.
So I'd buy a bottle of gin and a bottle of tonic and a couple limes. I'd get a couple airplane bottles of tequila.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what I'd take. Oh, yeah, yeah, because I knew.
People think you're going to a fucking bar mitzvah
hilarious.
Or something. You're like, nah, it's just for me.
Hilarious, hilarious.
For 24 hours?
And I would get the coke around 9 o'clock, the 8-ball, and the extra gram, which would be 4.5 fucking grams. That'll kill a normal person. That's what 5 people do.
Yeah.
That's what 5 people do.
Yeah. What do you think I was going to ask Tebow earlier. What do you guys think makes an addict? Because some people might listen to this and be like, I drink 8 beers, and I'm fine.
I think
what I'm telling you right now, what we're both telling, these stories make you a fucking addict.
I think the obsession of the mind, I think the fact that you obsess about it when it's not around, the anxiety that you discussed, Joey. And then I think it's like, I really do, because I know people that drink as much as I did, sometimes some of them maybe even more. But their life is fine. Their life is manageable. They can just do that.
Well, they have control.
Yes.
And I appreciate those people. But somewhere along the line,
it becomes the priority.
Drinking,
for me.
Yeah. Drinking, like, I used to have a father-in-law, my ex-wife's father-in-law. You know, he was a lieutenant colonel. But if you called him after 7, that motherfucker would be slurring 7 nights a week, Jack.
Yeah.
And he went to church on Sundays, didn't curse in his home, didn't drink, didn't smoke. You know, he drank. But he'd hit those fucking whiskeys, and by 7, he'd be slurring. Did he have a problem? Was somebody going to tell him? In his school, in his day and age, there was no alcohol problem. He just didn't go out and drink in a fucking car.
Right.
That's it. Nobody knows. He already had all the money he wanted. He owned an insurance company. Would I call him an alcoholic? I'm not sure. He was in the... he never hurt nobody. He never called you and tortured you. He never did nothing like that.
Well, wait, you consider yourself addicted to weed then? Because that sounds kind of like you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Listen. You know how much of this weed gets me high?
How much?
I'm sober already.
No, you're not.
Look at me.
Don't lie.
I swear to God.
I think he's... I would think so.
I'm telling you as your friend. I'm sober already. This weed does... I'm looking at this shit, and when I go home, I'm packing this up. This does nothing to you but destroy your lungs. This fucking whack shit. This just destroys your lungs. I'm just doing it tonight as a joke. I'll never do that again. This shit isn't lately, like last 2 or 3 months. Why do you think I was smoking 2 vapor pens the other day on fucking TV? Because this shit, you know, my next level is to do a line of heroin. But I won't. This shit ain't doing nothing for me. I enjoy the action. I'm an action junkie. The last 10 years I did coke, you really think I enjoyed hiding in a bathroom with no dick, looking at a mirror, picking my fucking scabs that there's nothing in there. I'd feel there's a coke rock in my face.
See, that's the same thing for me. Like, I would.
You have no fucking idea.
You know, you're like earlier. You were like, yeah, man. You're a good social drinker. I'm not a big drinker, but you're the kind of guy I would like to go out and party with. And you know, a lot of my friends, you know, Red Band, Jason Galern, a lot of people I love are like, dude, you're fine, man. You're fine. I'm like, no. You and I quit drinking together at 1. You go home. I go and drink till 6 in the morning by myself. I'm not fine. You know what I mean? Maybe the 2 hours you and I knock down a six-pack together, I'm fine.
At 1:15, you're already thinking about, I got to get out of here because I got to catch the liquor store before it closes at 2.
1:50? 1:50, if I'm at the Comedy Store at 1:50, and you know, they're like, hey, you want to go on and fuck around with Don Barris at the end of the night? I'm like, I got to hit this fucking pink dot. I got 10 minutes to go get a 12-pack. Or you know what I mean? Or I'm fucked.
How much money would you spend a night, do you think?
Well, I was the king of, I mean, you know, and you know the deal, dude. You really get good at spinning your addiction into free. I could get, I probably average 10 free drinks a night. just by knowing bartenders, comedy store, even a couple of my buddies bartend along Hollywood.
Even a 12-pack's like, what, $15?
Well, that's it at the end of the night. Yeah, that's after he dropped 10. And he drank 55 fucking drinks, 20 shots. He smoked 18 joints at the store. He did 3 bumps. Somebody offered you meth. Somebody offered to take you home and let you pet the... I mean, when you went to the... I mean, I would. There was nights I didn't have a spot. And I go, I'm going down to the store to hustle. And as I was leaving, I'd see Maz Jabrani. Maz, throw me a 50 till Friday. Joe, you got to follow me to the ATM machine. That's fine. I'd follow him to the ATM, take a 50, go back to the store, bump into somebody. He goes, Joey, I have something for you. I got a
Remember Chewy?
Chewy, I'd have a gram of blow for you. Somebody would come up and go, I got a half gram of blow for you for free.
Mm-hmm.
Then somebody would go, I got weed for $20. The 60, the 50 I borrowed from him. So now I just went up there with a zero. I'm home already with 30, a gram of blow, and a fucking eighth of weed, a $20 bag of weed.
Yep.
That's all I needed for the night.
I would go out with $20. Yeah. I would come back with $15, hammered, and I got 3 joints in my pocket.
At the store, Tuesday through fucking Saturday, 10 years ago, I was drunk every fucking night.
Yeah.
I would wait till I'd do my set, and then I'd go crazy because he'd make me fucking doubles that were the size of fucking, you know. What's going on with Tony Bennett? You going to play him sometime this fucking year, cocksucker? It's a beautiful day to be alive. I'm happy, Tebow, that you did what you did. You're going to see what happens.
Thank you, buddy. I hope so.
It's fucking amazing. Once you get the mentality that, man, I could really go for a drink, and you're like, I put work in.
Yeah.
I put work in.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, you can go on a diet and count your calories, go to the gym. That'll make that fucking sandwich at night, because you know, leave it. Go ahead, dog.
Yeah, dog.
Yeah, I might have to eat that 500 milligram with you to take it to the next limit. No, you ain't high either.
Oh, yes, I am.
He's so high.
Yes, I am.
That cookie didn't do dick to you.
Huh?
That cookie didn't do dick to you.
Well, the wax and the joint did, and then the cookie did.
What about the fucking electronic puffer thing?
Yeah, that's the wax, I think.
This is fucked up.
But I'm totally willing to believe that Joey is not stoned anymore.
That's crazy.
And you look like you might be a little stoned still.
This actually isn't really that. Like, this is halfway. Not kind of.
No, this isn't
I've
bad.
Had a lot worse.
That edible isn't bad. Let's eat that brownie.
No, thank you.
Let's make this a fucking celebration. It's like when they beat up that guy in Goodfellas. It's a celebration.
Well, it's crazy, Tebow, because you came home. Like, Joe, we've talked about it a lot, how many people leave and never come back.
Oh, yeah,
like,
for
that's
sure.
Crazy that you came. Like, most people don't.
I mean, it was always my intention to come back. But yeah, I can absolutely see why people would come here and fucking lose it and be like, you know what? Fuck this. Fuck these people. Fuck this place. Fuck that place. Fuck this town. You know, I mean, I could definitely relate to that.
Did any part of you think you were going to stay?
Maybe 5-10%. You know, once springtime rolled around and I was loving that city so much, because I do love Chicago and the clubs are so nice and the people are so friendly. You know, so many pretty girls, and everyone's so different. I was kind of like, I could see myself living here, man. This is a nice-ass fucking town. Well, great walk around town. Great restaurants.
Do you go to Wrigley? I've always wanted to go to Wrigley.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. You never been to Wrigley? Or have you ever been to Chicago?
I'm from Boston, so I've been to Fenway, and I've been to Camden, and then the Dodgers. So I want to go to Wrigley.
You're going
to
hate me, Chicagoans. I'm going to tell you what the best meal I had.
Oh, you were just there.
In Chicago. Well, I went to this place that was close. I love this place. It's easy. It's Italian. Small Mario's. It's downtown. I went in there the first day and got the fried Diablo, the shrimp with the fucking calamari and the mussels. Delicious. And I went the next day and got the steak out of Vesuvio. Delicious with a side salad. Delicious water. I didn't touch the bread. I'm going to tell you what the best meal I had was.
Mm-hmm.
Oatmeal cooked in coconut milk.
What?
Oh, my God, Lee.
Didn't you have an Italian beef, too?
No, I didn't have an Italian beef.
Really?
It was this big. It was this big. When she brought, and I looked at it on the menu, I go, I got to taste that.
Where was it? Is that the same place?
It was down the corner. It's Carlson Gracie's old neighbor, this jiu-jitsu master, and that's where he used to go to breakfast. Everybody says it's a really good breakfast.
Uh-huh. And that's all it was just oatmeal cooked in coconut milk?
With coconut drizzles on top and sliced banana like a motherfucking soldier. I'm looking to buy some coconut milk this week and try. I'm going to go online and learn how to make that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, fucking delicious, guys.
If I told you I went to Chicago and the best thing I ate was oatmeal, you'd punch me in the face.
You'd kick him in right in the fucking balls. I remember one time, you know, Joey texted me the address of the studio today. And I was so scared, as I was like, all right, man, can't wait to do it. I text him back, but then I'm like, man, should I text him? I texted Joey about, I don't know, shit, 6 years ago, 5 years ago. I was doing a show at the Ice House, and I was booking it, and I fucking text Joey. I'm like, hey, man, sorry to bother you. Just want to know if you want to fucking do my show Friday at the Ice House. If you're in town, I'd love to have you.
I wish I had, like, the Law & Order sound effects, like, dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
You never take
my phone rings. My phone, I hit send, my phone rings. It's Joey Diaz. I'm like, oh, shit, cool. He's calling me back to tell me if he can or can't do it. What a polite thing to do. I answer, hey, what's up, Joey? Listen to me, cocksucker. You text me, we're not two 14-year-old Asian girls here. You call me like a man, motherfucker. You ever text me again, I'm going to smash your thumbs with a hammer.
I was fucking pissed. I hate that shit.
Smash your thumbs with a hammer. I think I fucking shit my pants when he did it. And I really just didn't want to bother you with a phone call. So no. I was like, he can get back to me at his own accord. Just let me know if you want to do it. Phone rings right away. I'm like, hey, just listen to me, fuckface. I was like, oh, no. I'm doing my I do a podcast with Ari and Tripoli called Punch Drunk. So I'm doing Punch Drunk the next fucking day. I go, oh, by the way, I texted Joey Diaz about doing my show, and they both go, oh, shit, dog, you shouldn't have fucking. I go, yeah, nobody told me this. I didn't know you had this rule.
You don't text me, fuckface. How's Punch Drunk doing?
It's great, man.
Down there and do it. You guys have been doing it for a while.
Every Tuesday, noon to two.
And it's just sports.
I mean, it's probably 20% sports.
I've had people say they fuck around the Rousey on there. I heard.
We have a lot of callers. GSP, George St. Pierre calls in. The Diaz brothers, Dice Clay. You know, different people call in, and they have, you know, stories to tell. But you know, really, when we started it, you know, because all three of us were doing podcasts and different things, and we would always be in the store parking lot talking. You know, kind of, yeah, you see the game last night. It was fuck the Lakers or whatever. And, you know, we'd have an hour conversation that would start with sports, but then it's just like, you know, what's up with you and this chick I saw last night? It just gets into regular shit. So we were like, that'd be a funny idea for a show of three comic friends. You know, all three of us have been friends for 16 years of, like, let's try to talk a little sports, but I'm sure it's going to get into fucking, you know, just regular life shit. So, you know, we probably 30% sports or something like that.
You going to meetings in L.A.?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Not in L.A., not in Hollywood, but in L.A. I hear the Hollywood meetings are fucked up.
Oh, there's some good ones.
Good ones.
Yeah, there's some good ones. But yeah, just all, you know, West Side, Cummings Valley.
Sure. How do they make money? Because I went to D'Agostino's birthday on Magnolia, and there's an AA meeting.
Right next door.
In like a storefront.
It's a place that does meetings all day.
Mm-hmm.
And you take donations. You pass a basket around.
Oh, I was like,
those places
have a store?
Do meetings all the time. They do.
Yeah, usually a place will let you sort of.
I thought it was in a church, but
some,
like,
of them.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like 2,000 meetings a week in L.A.
Jesus.
So I Facebooked somebody maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah.
This is a true story. Facebooked them. They were very close to me, and one day something came up missing, and right away they pointed their finger at me. I was very hurt about it. 20-30 years passed. I always thought about them. You know, I contacted the sister. She hit me back. But I contacted the one sister and the one brother, and they didn't hit me back. When I went to Miami, the two girls showed up, but the cousin didn't show up. I was very tight with the cousin. The other day, the fucking phone rings. It's a Miami call. I'm busy doing a podcast. When I get home, I forget the call, and I check Facebook. And it was him who we grew up together.
Yeah.
Very fucking painful that his family accused me. It was fucking bad, but
what was
it
that got stolen, if you don't, I'm asking?
There was a watch or a fucking ring or rings. I don't remember what the thing was. I get home, I get over there, and they're like, you're not allowed here no more. This is what happened.
Yeah.
Get your stuff. You got to go. This is I had known these people all my life. They knew my parents. It was very sad. And trust me, I was no angel at the time. This went on because I was involved in other things. And sometimes karma smacks you.
Reputation
for something
preceded
else. Reputations.
You. Yeah.
I was really hurt. It made me go on a tear. And then my uncle, it made me go on a drug tear. I was living in a spaceship at a park. You know those parks that have the kids' spaceship?
Yeah.
I was living under the spaceship.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it was bad, Tebow. I've had my bouts with addiction.
Sure.
And I love talking about it because talking about it helps other people. They don't feel that shitty about their lives.
Yeah.
I was there. You know, I was smoking. There was a time that I figured out, you know what? I'm spending too much money on blow. On the way home at night on, in between Sunset and Hollywood, Selma.
Yes.
By the, where the fucking people dress like superheroes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Orange and Selma. They used to sell crack there. Tons. I mean, you'd drive there at one, there'd be 10 black dudes out there running to your car.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. One night I was looking for blow, and I pulled up, and the guy goes, you looking? We made eye contact. He gave me a chunk. I went home. I tried to snort it. I got dizzy and shit, and I told my friend next day, he goes, that wasn't blow. That was crack, stupid. So I said, that wasn't a bad chunk for $20. I smoked what I had at the house. I got fucked up. So for 6, 7, 8 weeks, I smoked crack, Jason.
Mm-hmm. That's a hard
my
one.
My fingers were dirty. I go home and tell Terry, go to bed. She'd wake up and go, what is that smell? And I go, it's the weed. And she goes, I smell your weed for years. I never smelled weed that bad. She knew. I would smoke it out of a Coke can. That's how crazy I was. So
I smoked weed out of a Coke can.
No, crack out of a Coke can.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, the Coke can pipe.
Well, I would tell her it was weed, but I put crack in there. And I'd smoke it. I mean, I'd done some dirty. My nails used to be fucking filthy in those days from touching the crack. And
a lot of ways, you're lucky to be alive.
Yes, but this is what it gets to. This is the worst because I always felt bad about this. I always felt bad. The first day I read about Whitney Houston's daughter, the first day I read about that, I knew exactly what happened. I knew exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew it didn't take a genius, you know, and they... whatever, and they kept talking. After the first month, I knew she was dead. It was just a matter of time.
Sure.
But it gave me time, a lot of time to think, you know? And I remember after my mother died for like 2 or 3 years, I could not jump off a building as bad as I wanted to, or I could not shoot myself as bad as I wanted to. So subconsciously, the reason why I could smoke as much as I do, because at the age of 15 and 16, I did everything in enormous amounts.
Yeah.
I wanted to die, but I didn't have the balls to do it. So I would eat those Quaaludes. You know, those fucking Quaaludes are strong.
Especially back
when you're 16,
Quaaludes.
They're fucking strong, dog. You drink a bottle of vodka with a Quaalude, you're playing in a certain fucking neighborhood.
That's
it's like eating
a lot of people.
And I mean, you look at my eyes and there's veins that have popped. Those are from nights with Quaaludes. You could feel the heat in your head and shit. Listen, man, and at that time, I had a pain that was intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
It was the pain of losing your mother and wanting answers, you know. And not just losing a mother, but losing your world. Because she was Whitney was a world. But also in that world came a lot of bad things that came in my world. You know, at the age of fucking 7, I knew my mom did blow. It was very embarrassing. And I would go to play with kids, and they would go, what's that thing about cocaine? And I would have to sit there and not say a word. What are you covering, Lee? What do you got, an ant under your hand?
What?
What do you got under your hand? Pick up your hand.
Nothing.
Why is your hand there all creepy like you're holding a fucking scorpion or some shit? Fucking guy.
That is what it looked like.
Yeah,
really?
Like a fucking Momo. Sure, like, yeah, move the notebook closer.
Spider
trap. The other way. There you go. So I saw my mom do drugs. I saw, you know, I'd have a piñata at my birthday parties. And the second piñata, she would put cocaine bindles in there for the adults.
Really?
And she would tell me, get on the floor. If you see an aluminum foil, pick them up and bring them back to mommy. I mean, I knew my mom saw blow. We had the bar. That was what those Cubans did at the time.
Sure.
So living with that, I never wanted to do blow. But then a month before she died, maybe 2 weeks before she died, I did fucking blow. And I remember I had it for like 2 or 3 months, and I was like, I'll never do this. I'll sell it. I think I sold some of it. But I kept one. One afternoon, I said, I'm taking this out with me. I knew exactly what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah.
Because once you see your hero do something, you're going to do it, okay? You know, mm-hmm. you see your parents drink. Mm-hmm. Your parents send you to your aunt's house on a Friday night. You come back Saturday morning, they're fucking hungover. Your dad's like, I'm not playing with you today. I'm on the couch, son, whatever.
Yeah.
What'd you guys do last night? Oh, we drank. You see empty beer bottles. You know, then when you turn 13, you want to do it. You know, people don't know that if your heroes do something... Our parents are our fucking heroes.
Yeah.
So if you see your parents drink, you're going to fucking drink. You're going to think it's okay to drink.
Sure.
You know, I never want to be a drinker, but my parents do it. It might be okay. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, totally.
This poor girl lost her world. And yeah, she had the father, but Bobby Brown is your father. It's like having me as your fucking father. You know what I'm saying?
No, you're a good father.
At that point for him, he was fucked up. He raised that girl fucked up.
Sure.
That girl was raised on a fucking plane with a nanny giving them money. When Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown did blow, who took care of that kid? a fucking nanny that was them. Doing blow too, that was getting $2,000 a week and a couple lines for taking care of the fucking kid, and she might sing or something. Who do you think? I mean, these people snorted fucking blow.
A lot.
These were fucking real party people.
They had big bucks.
You know, they were in Miami. What do you think that kid was? So your kid knows what's going on. What do you think that kid was going to do? What do you think my mother thought I was going to grow up to do? You think I was going to be a fucking doctor? I saw you do blow. I found blow in the fucking basement. I found bales of weed in the basement. What the fuck do you expect me to
found
do?
Found blowing pinatas.
I found blowing fucking pinatas. The point being that she was my world, my mom. I didn't have a dad. You know, she was my world. Same thing. They pulled the plug. I can't describe to you the pain I was walking around with. And I didn't know it till this girl died yesterday. When she died, I broke down yesterday because I knew what she felt. It just brought it back. I remember what she was. I remember, you know, I used to get fucked up and go to the house where I found my mother. And I'd sit on the stairs hoping that maybe this was all a mistake.
Yeah.
Maybe my mom will open the door and go, get the fuck in here. Where the fuck have you been for a month, you dumb fuck?
Yeah.
Like, that's how delusional I got in the back of my mind. When you get that, when you bury somebody and you see them in a casket for 5 days, but when somebody that big in your life goes, it's like a dream. Like, you're like, it's going, you know, eventually I'm going to wake up and my mom's going to make me steak and eggs like she always did.
Yeah, the phone rings. You're like, oh, I bet that's my mom. Oh, shit, it can't be.
It wasn't. Yeah. I just remembered this years ago when I started writing. I would go at first, like the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks after she died, after I moved in with the Benders, the electricity was still on. I think the electricity stayed on until about January. And during the holidays, I would go over there in the afternoons after school and just sit there. Hoping that she'd walk through, and I could hear the mice. The mice had taken over the house. I would sit on the chair and just, it was a silent house.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put the TV on. Just to hear her. Maybe she was in the basement cooking, getting something. This is a misunderstanding. This is how delusional I got.
Sure.
So I know where that little girl was when she was doing those drugs, man. She didn't want to live without her mother. I didn't want to go without my mother, man.
Yeah.
So in hindsight now, I really understand addictions. That's why I wanted to have you on the show. You know, people would come to me and say, and I would ask about you. I always asked about Tebow, and he's drinking again. You know, whatever. Tebow's going to get it together. If I got it together, these guys could get it together. They're more decent than I am. I wasn't no genius. It took me fucking till 44 to realize. So you're way ahead of the curve, man.
Yeah.
And you, I can't, when I meet somebody and I'm like, I have a friend, Jody, who's a great girl, and she's just 42, she's single. You know, you call her at 11, Tebow, she's hammered.
Yeah.
Hammered, you can hear it.
And I can relate.
But she's my friend, I'm not there to judge her. But in my mind, I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, when is this going to end?
Yeah.
When is she going to take this seriously? Because I didn't want to be Ray Charles. I didn't want to get clean and sober at 60 fucking one.
Right.
You know, off heroin or blow. I didn't want... Like I told Joe Rogan, I didn't want people pulling Joe Rogan going, I told you he was a fucking junkie. I didn't want to die in Houston. I didn't want my wife to find me on the floor one morning. She could never, I didn't want all these things.
Well, you remember when Mitch Hedberg died?
Absolutely.
When he died, you know, and everybody that knew him or knew his wife or, you know, any part of his life or whatever, when he died, when anybody got that call, nobody was like, what happened? Everyone was just like, where? Where'd they find him? You know what I mean? No one was like, oh, he got hit by a car. He got, you know, plane crash. How did he die? Everybody knew how he died. So no, when somebody would call and they'd be like, hey, man, Mitch died. You'd be like, where? You know, I noticed that no one ever said how. Everyone just said where.
I was so
And I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be a guy that died at 48. And when people heard, they're like, where'd they find him? Or, you know, drinking and driving or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, a lot of it's just like, give yourself a fucking chance, man. Give yourself a fucking chance. And it's like earlier when you're saying, when you're like, you're stuck. You know, if you're stuck, all that really means, it doesn't mean you're fucked. It means you got to change something. Something has to change if you're stuck. You know, it's the only way you get unstuck.
You sit down, you write a plan. You had a great plan, Tebow. I take my fucking hat off to you, man. That's the way I would do it.
A lot of people help.
If I ever was to do a line again in my life, within 3 days later, I know for a fact.
I mean, it's I have two drinks, I'm having 20. No, there's no, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I'm like, there's no sense in having two drinks to me. Never was, never will be. There's no sense.
Where's our friend? Where's your ex-girlfriend that was clean and sober? Where the fuck happened to her?
I don't know. I'm not sure what she's up to. We haven't talked to her in quite a while.
Anybody seen her? I saw her for a couple weeks. I'm talking about the big
girl. Yeah.
I never saw her again at a club. For years, I saw her out once a week.
I don't think she does a lot of club stand-up gigs. I mean, she'll do bar gigs here and there. I'll see them on Facebook or some shit, but she and I didn't end well. Let's just say that. Our ending didn't end well.
I haven't seen her, and I think about it. I thought that she had a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
I know she got a couple good jobs or something the last couple months.
Yeah.
I know she really works the program, though.
Yep.
She really works the program, mm-hmm. You know, so I know she would always. Teebs, like I said, man, I wanted to have you on if you could tell your story.
Well, I'm glad. I'll do your podcast anytime.
I know
you're the
a lot
best.
Of people who like you, T-Bill, and a lot of people, when I go on the road, people ask me about you. So I know this is in your future. If you really give this a chance and really go, you know what? If I got to break down, I'll fucking smoke a number with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep this under control, and my friends will watch me. But like I said, I don't ever want to feel like I did on that blow again. The last 10 years was such a waste. Yep. I just did it because my dick got hard when I drove down the street and made the left turn. You know, my dick got hard when the action. For years, I missed that fucking criminality. So this was my replacement. I missed jumping through windows. I missed fucking scoping out Tebow. As soon as Tebow fucking leaves, Lee called me. I'm going to go break in through his window and take 2 pounds of coke from him. Mm. I missed action. That cocaine gave me action. Now that I think about it, I fucking hate it. I would look at myself in the night and pick my face and cry and fucking be sick to my stomach, you know, that this thing had such a fucking grip on me.
Yeah, and it's also, I think that's another thing of addiction. It's like when you're on it, you don't see things for what they are. You know, I'd be like, hey, man, everybody's loving me and this is great. And then it's like, you're like, you're annoying the fuck out of everybody. You know, I do podcast hammer. People are like, you wouldn't shut the fuck up. No one even knew what the fuck you were talking about. Not letting other people talk. You're not even listening. It's like, but that's not how I saw it in my head. You know what I mean? So then when you look back on hindsight, you're kind of like, well, fuck, man. I don't want to be that fucking guy.
My brother, my heart goes out to you. I'm very proud of you, and I want you to know I was always a dear friend to you. I just didn't know where you were coming from. And if you ever need anything, we're here for you, brother.
No, you're the best.
Let me give some shout-outs, and I'll get you out of here. I'll give you a ride to the train. And we'll abandon shit. Lee, how you feeling, cocksucker?
I'm good,
you want to smoke some more of these vapors?
Not really. Do you?
Always. This party never ends with mad flavor. How you going to act? You know, how you fucking... You're doing good, though. You're looking good with your little purple shirt.
I'm trying.
You got sponsors. You bitch-smacking motherfuckers.
I went to Redondo Beach. Have you been there for the shrimp?
Huh?
Have you been to Redondo Beach?
Yeah, I go down there on my bicycle once a week, cocksucker. Yeah, Redondo Beach. I got time to go to fucking Redondo Beach. All right, that's what I
got
time
to eat oatmeal in Chicago and not get an Italian
because
beef.
It was down the fucking block from the house.
And they don't have an Italian.
I could have walked. I went around the corner to the Italian beef. It looked like your fucking asshole. That's the color of it. Would you eat that Italian beef by two fucking Mexicans? Would you do that? No, Mr. Beef was close by.
Yeah.
I just didn't get to.
Oh, I know that is.
I'll eat Mr. Beef if I got to settle for anything.
Mr. Beef or Al's is good.
Yeah, Al's. So I wasn't close to them. I was on fucking downtown, and they made gyros at the same place they made beef, and they made
you don't like flesh.
French fries. And it was a fucking regular fucking dump. So I didn't want pastrami. Once you have that many combinations, it's two Spanish
pizza,
dudes,
Chinese food.
Yeah,
in the same
No. There wasn't really nothing good in that area except Mario's. And then I went to Rosemont. Tell them what's in Rosemont. Ugats. They don't even have a gas station. They got a Fogo to fucking chow across from the comedy club. I wasn't doing $70 to eat 2 ounces of meat. You know, Fogo to chow, you got to smoke 55 joints to make it worth your while.
No shit.
If not, it's $70 a piece.
Yeah, you got to go in there hungry
as
fuck.
And then after you
eat. Then you get your money's worth, but then you're fucked.
You know, after you eat 20 pieces of garlic beef and you're like, this is great. Now you got to sit there for an hour and go, I don't even know if I could drive home. I don't know if my guts are going to come out of my fucking ears because you know you're going to drop a fucking shipment of money. Let me give this readout. First one to my man, D.S. Dorchester, for referring One Day as a Lion. I hadn't heard that in a while, you bad motherfucker. Abraham Baya, or whatever your fucking name is. Abraham Baya, Daya, you know I love you. Smiler, Mike Jones Jr., Kevin Knight, Talking Lair. Cleo, get a hold of Lee. I got 2 weeks off. Let's pick a day and do this fucking podcast. James Trolls, and my main man showed up to the show, brought me a book. He brought gave me some cigars. I got to give you a little stuffed animal.
I love cigars.
Bob Lalingus and his beautiful father, and they include the shirts. I love Bob Lalingus. And it was funny, Friday night, you start meeting these people on the road,
mm-hmm.
and you communicate with them on Facebook or Gmail, and they send you little gifts, and you could tell where they're coming from. You love them, they're genuine. And it's funny that Friday night, I was like, I didn't fucking see Bob. That's fucking weird. I didn't talk to him on Facebook. I didn't talk to him. Maybe he doesn't know. And Saturday night, I'm on stage, and I look down, and there's Bob and his dad right in front of me. I felt like shit, and I was fucking... I didn't have anxiety that night. I just went straight up there. What's up with you, cocklicker?
And then Sean Tierney sent us those Bruce Lee shirts.
I saw that, the Bruce Lee shirts. Thank you, brother, and some fucking green tea to clean out the system, the adrenals. You going to a kettlebell class with me tomorrow, 11
Hell
o'clock?
Yeah.
We're going to go have a good time over at VMAC. It's going to be fun. Six people already signed up for tomorrow. But he's got like an 8-pound weight to train you with just to teach your form.
Okay.
And what you could do is you go to a couple weeks, just go to the kettlebell class, and then just stay for a sound. And you're done for the week, and you'll walk around sore for 2 days.
That's a fucking long workout.
But it's something different, brother.
That's true.
You're a 27-year-old man.
How long is the class?
4 hours.
But you do a lot of stretching. You do a lot of sit-ups.
Jiu-jitsu is
like
2 hours.
Jiu-jitsu is 2 hours, and you do a lot of shit there. So just get used to the kettlebells and then go to jiu-jitsu on Thursday this week, and you start going there twice a week, once for jiu-jitsu, once for kettlebell, and then one day when you're ready to go, you're Slim Jim Magoo, you go, fuck it, I'll do the kettlebells. I can't do both. I won't walk on Wednesday and Thursday. I didn't walk on Wednesday and Thursday after the kettlebells.
Jeez.
I didn't work out till Friday.
It's really cool watching the UFC now that I've started jiu-jitsu. And it was cool for me. Like, I didn't understand it. Like, I still, in class, when I'm drilling, the mistake I'm making is I'm going too fast.
Yeah, John Budd said you move well on the floor. He goes, for a little stocky, little spinning motherfucking juke.
But it's not good because...
Well, you get good.
But then I was watching the UFC, and they're there for, like, a minute, like, 30 seconds, just getting... Like,
right.
You don't have to do it right away.
You can work it. But what you're doing is you're putting pressure on your opponent. So that leg is on his leg.
Like, that's what I'm messing
your
up
Your leg on. Is on his thigh, and he can't move his thigh. He's locked. You got 200 pounds on his thigh. So now he's just grilling out that leg, and you're playing like a hand thing. And everything you go for, he's got to react. So one time he's going to make a mistake, and that's when you push, and then you take it from there. What are we doing, a fucking jiu-jitsu lesson here?
Sure.
I
we did jiu-jitsu on the floor the other day.
That's right. I love you, cocksucker.
I love
any
you
dates
too,
coming up you
want to
talk about? I know Sam is revamping the show, and you guys are doing it at a hotel in Hollywood.
At somewhere. The W, yeah.
At the W. So that's going to happen pretty soon. That's going to be rocking.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. Are you doing it?
He called me, and he didn't give me a date. He goes, I'd like for you to do it. And
okay.
I've always, you know, I look at you guys.
I think it's August 19th. I'm not sure. It could be somewhere in there.
Fucking young kids. And I was an old guy, and now... We're all getting older, but the most important thing is we're still here.
Yeah.
And people have bounced back. Listen, man, what's that dude that plays fucking Robert Downey Jr.? That guy got caught in a room in Venice, right?
With
a fucking Batman suit jerking off on coke. That's how, at the end of his addiction, he was, that's what I was doing.
He got pulled over in his Porsche, totally naked, with a loaded handgun and like a half a fucking pound of coke. In the front seat of a convertible Porsche. They pull him over. They look in the fucking front seat. It's like a fucking brick of coke, a loaded handgun, and he's completely naked.
You're crazy.
And now he's fucking...
You have no idea,
sober,
man.
Sober, super rich,
and he's fucking Iron Man. And you get your life together and you move on and you realize that life has so much to fucking offer, man. It really does. Like, I couldn't imagine going back now.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine going back now. I love my reefer. I don't want to get no problem at all. I couldn't even imagine having it on me in my presence. And it wasn't bad. It was what I brought on myself.
As,
I'm not blaming fucking anybody.
I could blame this
and this guy and that guy.
Well, just when he says, like, if you were going to have a joint, that, like, but, like, is that possible?
Everybody has a vice, Lee.
Right.
Everybody's got to do something. Everybody goes home at the end of the night and dresses up like a woman or sticks a Q-tip in his nutsack or does something. Everybody has to get off somewhere.
Both of those things.
These fucking people who are politicians and I don't drink and I'm a Christian, then you find out they're fucking a black hooker.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the truth. That's everybody has something.
Right.
It's calming that something. What's the easy? When it came to me, I said, you know what? I got to do something. I'm not just going to sit there and go to meetings and hug somebody. That won't work for me.
Right.
I got to kill my evil switch. which was the blow. What makes me miss jobs? What makes me yell at people if they don't pay me?
Cheat,
what makes me fucking do the shit I do? Cocaine. Reefer has never made me break through a fucking window and want to stay up all night. It's never done that to me. Alcohol used to be my gateway.
Sure. And
because in those days, even though, like, it's so weird the tricks you play on yourself. I would say, I'm not going to go out and do blow tonight.
I'm just going to have four drinks.
Let me go out and have two drinks. I would have, in those days, I used to drink Southern Comfort and orange juice. I was 19, 20. Southern Comfort and orange juice.
You get three of those. Now you need blow.
Three of those, you need blow. Yeah. And here I am in the same. And I knew what trap I was walking into. I'm not a retard. Mm-hmm. I knew by walking into that bar.
You just get good at lying to yourself.
You just lie to yourself. This is a weird thing, addiction, man. And
I got really good at lying to myself. Like, I would really believe the shit that would come out of my mouth. Even including, like, I'm cool, man, I got this. I'm not going to drink today, a little bullshit like that. And it's like fucking 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm shit-faced. It's like 3 o'clock. You know, I'll be drinking in fucking, you know, these dive bars with all these old dudes with big noses. And I'm, you know, 35. These guys are twice my age, just fucking tying it on.
I'm happy you got everything together and I continue success.
Thank you, buddy.
If you need any help from me, please... don't hesitate. You know, I've been down that block and I know what it is to. It took me like, I remember even 6 months being clean on blow. Every day I walked on eggshell.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I knew that.
It's a daily grind.
And I wasn't waiting for, my cat got hit by. No. I just knew that in 1 minute I was going to snap, but I never snapped.
Yeah.
Every time I thought about it, I'd say a prayer and go, you know what? I got to think of this. I don't want to die. I knew I would die. I just, some people say, use that term a lot in AA. I gotta be honest with you, I knew I was gonna die.
So
I was getting at night, towards the end of the night, when I was coming down off the blow, I would get electric shocks on my spine. My spine was starting to hurt. That's not good.
Yeah.
That's not fucking good. Lee, you got anything to tell me?
Nothing to tell you, but I was wondering, like, how you dealt with, in those 6 months, like, going somewhere where you used to do coke or. Like,
I didn't go,
doing
you don't go to them.
I didn't go to the comedy store. Yeah. I got all those things.
But you didn't
I was still friends with the drug dealers. I kept in touch with them. Hello. I kept them. And that gave me more. A lot of people just take the numbers out. In fact, I talked to my drug dealer tonight. He's in that new movie with Compton. Straight out of Compton.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he asked me if I wanted. I called him up congratulate him because my wife wants to see it. And he said if I wanted to go to the cast and crew with him on the 14th, but I'm in Dallas, Washington, D.C. I made a promise. I made an old-time promise, something that we break on a daily basis. That is the worst thing. First time we broke a promise or told a lie, we went into this dark fucking avenue in your life. I stopped lying when I was about 21. Yeah, you exaggerate from time to time. But to just tell somebody a blatant lie about something, I was there, I shot him, that I had to stop doing. And I was doing it to get me somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Tebow, I got a check. Tebow, listen, Lee's going to give me $10,000. Just give me another ounce of blow till Friday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a bold out lie.
Sure.
I was doing those type of lies. You know, that's the first one you have to stop. You know, and then it's just tough. It's just very tough. And eventually you get the steps. And for some people, it takes 40 years. For some people, it takes 50 years.
Some people never get it.
Some people never get it. And the whole thing is just being honest with yourself, what you can and can't do. That night, I walked into the strip club when I was in the halfway house. I was a month away from getting married.
Mm-hmm.
I got no shame to tell people on this part. I was a month away from getting married. Here I am in a fucking strip club.
Correct.
Why am I in a strip club?
Snorting coke out of some chick's asshole.
Oh, my God. I gave it a whole bag of blow. I fingered her asshole. I sniffed it. I got this girl, you know, I did everything to this poor girl. I'll never forget that, going over 36 in Boulder. There's a part where you connect from I-25 to 36 of the I-70. I don't remember. And you're coming over a hill in Bloomfield to hit Boulder, and I saw those lights. I still remember putting my brace on because I was jerking off in the fucking car all over my car salesman suit. I had already came like 4 times at the strip club. I mean, I didn't fuck her, but I did everything else to her. I had come all over me, and here I am jerking off. That's how hot she was. I was smelling my hands, jerking off in the car. How embarrassing is that?
Yeah.
As a fucking 30-year-old or whatever the fuck I was. I was going to get married. The girl I was marrying had a kid, and here I am blowing $1,500 on her and a half ounce of blow giving this poor girl, whatever the fuck I gave her, you know? It was just pathetic. I think of this shit now, and it's fucking pathetic.
Yeah.
fucking pathetically that I was so weak, but that's what it did. I'll never forget getting out of prison, Tebow. Prison.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate slap in the face as a man. You have no idea, Tebow. Rehab, Mitzi not passing you, your car getting a flat. You have no idea how humiliating it is as a man to be in prison. For a man to kick your bed and tell you to get up, Tebow. Come on, mop the fuck up.
Tell you when you can eat.
And tell you when you can eat and adjust your life. And here I got out. Guys, I couldn't wait to get a package. And my father-in-law had a trailer. So in those days, the halfway houses gave you furloughs. So I think I waited, 6 days. I got on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that Saturday, I got a furlough. And he had a trailer on the property. And I said, I'll just sleep on the trailer. My God, I went in that trailer with like a fucking half ounce of blow. And it was the first time in a year or something. Tebow.
You're lucky you didn't overdose.
Oh, my God.
The way you're fucking knocking that back.
I'll never forget that night. That by 4 a.m, I had done like half of it. And the rest of it, I dumped in the toilet. And I was looking out the windows. And all I could see were guys dressed in white with those fucking suits. Like DEA guys on ropes coming down the trees. That's how strong my paranoia was.
Yeah.
And me trying to sweep whatever was on the floor for coke and lick it up. I was licking dust and dog hair and dirt and fucking. Anyway, good luck.
Thank you, buddy. I love you.
I love you to death. Thank you very much.
You're really a brother to all of us.
No, man. I try to. I've been down there, and when it comes to that shit, all I could say is, listen, I don't care how you get clean. I don't care how long it takes. But it's such a beautiful life. And I talk some shit. I talk about eating assholes and stabbing people. I'm telling you this as a brother, that there's such a beautiful life waiting for you. And after a year or two, you know what? You might go back to some of your bad habits, and that's fine, but you have to control them. You can't drink. Like, I know I cannot put cocaine in my nose. Man. I know I can't put cocaine in my nose. I got a Quaalude I've been holding on to for a year. I'm going to drop one of these nights. That's okay. That's not the horse that killed me.
Sure.
Let me read some sponsors. Let's get the fuck out of here.
There you go, buddy.
As usual, you're fucked up. You need help with your addiction. Alpha Brain will focus you, cocksucker. This will bring you right back. This will overturn that shit. You understand me? Because you start thinking about what's important and what's not important. That's part of fucking addiction, beating addiction. You realize what's important and what's not important. What's that got to do with on it? I got no fucking idea. But here's what I do know. All right? I went for fucking swimming today with the baby, and I did laps, and I also went to fucking jiu-jitsu at 10 in the morning with John Evan, and I just told him, get on top of me. Don't let me fucking up. That was the whole class today. Don't let me up. And I'll tell you what, I did on the shroom tech, and I breathed, and I must have rolled around for 40 minutes. I'm going to be sore as fuck tomorrow, don't get me wrong. But the shroom tech got me there, all right? Whether it's the Alpha Brain, whether it's the fucking hemp protein and acai or chocolate, which tastes fucking delicious, whether it's the shroom tech, I'll tell you what, Onnit is on top of their motherfucking game. Go to Onnit.com right now. See the great selection of nutrients and supplements they have. If you like something, go to the box and press in.
Church.
And you get 10% off like a gentleman. And if they have another program called Stay Onnit, where they just take your credit card and they mail it directly to your house at the first of the month, and they give you an additional 10% off. So you're getting 20% off right there. You got to ask yourself, who's better than you? Go to Onnit right now and press in.
Church.
And enjoy the great products they have to offer you. You're sitting there going, Joey, I can't stop smoking. I got the answer, cocksucker. Hear these cigs right there. Bam! Tremendous. They last longer. They taste better. They got cigars. They got e-cigarettes from 24 to 16 to 8 to no fucking nicotine in there. You can work yourself backwards and you get a cigar. You get all four of those in the cigar. 5 for $50. That's right. 5 for $50. Go to the box and press in.
Joey's Church.
Boom! And get 5 fucking cigars for $50. That's how we run it over there. Hear these cigs. Tastes better, lasts longer. And a big fucking shout out to my brothers up there in Northern California. Nailed it. Life, them bad motherfuckers up there making wax gorilla biscuits, white chocolate that tastes like Mexican fucking, what's that drink?
Horchata.
Horchata, 250 milligrams. But it don't end there. They got one of the best vapor pens in the fucking market. You understand me? You could smoke vegetables out of there. You could smoke wax. When it comes to wax and dabbing, nobody knows more about that shit than NailedItLife.com. Go to NailedItLife.com. What do I got to press in?
Joey Diaz.
Joey Diaz, D-I-A-Z, cocksuckers, and get 20% off your first order with the vapor pen. The best vapor pen in the market. They guarantee it. They stand behind it. You call Dave, he calls you back in 2 fucking minutes, and you got your action back, okay? A big shout-out to Nailed It Life. A big shout-out to Hitty Sings, and a big shout-out to Honor.com. Go on 3 of these web pages right now and support us. Help us out, cocksucker. And don't forget my people over at Iron Dragon, Dave Foley, looking out a fucking window. I love you, cocksucker. Don't forget, I'm in DC Improv, August 13th or something like that to the 15th. I'm taping my CD, brand new stuff. We keep writing every day. You know how we do it. Nice. Come on down. Baltimore, DC, wherever the fuck you're from, that's where you're going. You understand me? And that's it. I want to thank Jason Tebow for coming on and dropping some addiction knowledge and for opening up his life to you. I want to thank Lisa F. for sitting there like a dunce. All he needs is a fucking hat over there. You're smoking more vapor, cocksucker. You look good.
Thank you, buddy.
Everything all right. How's Paul? Yeah.
She's good. She's good. She's finishing up her work for the summer. It's
What are you guys doing this weekend? What do you think?
She's going to Vegas for the
weekend.
Vegas?
Yeah. With who?
With her college friends.
Oh, jeez.
So I have talking later on the security division.
Girls or boys?
All girls. So thank God Jesus I didn't go. Christ. I got invited, but...
We're going to go like a half a fag and walk around like Peter Pan, dropping
carrying
20s.
A purse for her and shit.
Yeah, you ain't that right. type of motherfucker. No. You're the real deal, Jack. You're slinging Jew dick and giving out fucking Hanukkah cards.
And yeah, and then I'm going to be in Toronto the same weekend you're in D.C. doing a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Look at you. All right. They're going to go up there and see you. All right. Tebow, we got any dates coming up?
When does this come out? Tomorrow? Something?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be at the Ice House this Friday, actually doing
the Death Squad show.
Yeah, Death Squad show this
Carlos
Friday.
Carlos Mencia, I'll be down there. It'll be a great night for Death Squad. I'll be home minding my own fucking business. I love you guys.
Yeah.
See you Wednesday night at the Ice House. It's sold out.
In no way.
Sold out already. And we'll see you back Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock, my brothers. Have a great fucking night. Thank you for listening. Have a great day tomorrow. Thank you for listening. I love you, cocksuckers.
Thanks, guys.
Stay black.
Suck it.
The show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of their optimization products, like Alpha Brain New Mood. Oh, you need a key. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of their great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport, anything like that. Use code word church to get 10% off. Go to NailedItLife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And they're also the makers of Los Gummies Hermanos. And if you go to HitEcigs.com, you get 5 Hit E-Cigs or Hit E-Cigars for $50 when you use code word Joey's Church.
Now you do what they told you. And 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 now you do what they told you. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Killing in the name of. What they told ya. Now you do 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 what they told ya. And 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 now you do what they told ya. Tell me.